All right, let's get you plugged in.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 109 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
I feel like we're in the groove now. We had that little week away, month away, came back, did a great episode. I feel we're in the groove.
Yeah. Shooting along.
Watch us now completely fuck it.
Don't be typical skip to the end. Should we tell them what's coming up?
So to kick things off, the topic this time will be our top three most disturbing films you've ever seen.
And that's a big one because, you know, how do you define what disturbs you? I think that's quite open-ended.
It is, and you've probably seen guys on social media, the response has been epic.
Yeah.
Overwhelming.
Probably, yeah. Well, a bit disturbing.
See what you did there, but at least we can comfort ourselves with the main review. We're going to be reviewing Ralph Breaks the Internet, the sequel to Wreck-It Ralph.
Indeed we are. And our rewatch this time round is Southland Tales. It's a film that didn't do particularly well at the box office, but I think there are a lot of people out there who respect it, who enjoy it, who like it. A lot of people who think it's shite. So we'll have a good old think about it, a good old debate about it.
Also on this episode, we're going to be masturbating over M. Night Shyamalan.
Well done.
Well done.
A good one that I think, I don't know, I'm intrigued because I think I know what you're both going to say.
Yeah.
But you sometimes surprise me.
I think we're all going to have the same one.
I think so too.
Stick around for that.
Yeah. Not only that, we're going to be playing round two of VeggieBets. Yes, we've had some really good responses from social media. And guess what? We're going to shove round two right down your throats.
Wow.
So enjoy
imagery.
It. Yeah.
Wow, lovely.
You'll have this and bloody like it.
Yes.
You pricks. And we'll also have all the usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give away an absolute ridiculous amount of prizes, as per. And we'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. Let's get started.
So let's kick things off with the topic. This time round, it's the top three most disturbing films you've ever seen. And I think on the last episode I said I was looking for more of the reason. That's what I was excited about.
Yeah,
because anyone could pick any film and say it's disturbing. But I want to know why. So let's kick things off with Ben. Give me your first one.
And my first most disturbing film is Antichrist.
Oh my god, Lars von Trier.
Yes, directed by Danish nutjob Lars von Trier. Have either of you seen it?
Yes.
You have? You both seen it? Well, that's fantastic. So as you guys will know, and you guys out there in listener land might not, it's about a couple whose kid dies. So to get over it, they go to a secluded cabin where they both go mental. Does that sum it up quite well?
Perfectly.
I think that's the rated version at least.
The reason why this is so disturbing is because everything about this film is profoundly fucked. Mm-hmm. Every last thing. For starters, the kid dies because they're too busy banging to pay attention to the kid, so he falls out of a window. They're at it.
Knocking boots.
And then the kid falls out of a window. And, oh God. And then they go to the cabin. And this is one of the most mental things I've ever seen. They see this fox disemboweling itself, right? And it's one thing that the fox is disemboweling itself. The fox then turns around to them and says, "Chaos reigns." Yep, a talking fox. You know you're watching a Lars von Trier film, you know. And then, every part of this film is so mental. And then later on, the wife, I can't even remember why she does this, but she smashes her husband's dick in with a block of wood.
Yeah.
Right? And then she jerks him off until he ejaculates blood.
As you do.
Yeah, this ain't a Disney film.
Yeah. I mean, you could say got wood.
Oh,
you could say got wood. I mean,
I like
and
that.
Splinters.
Oh, Jesus! But it's thing after thing after thing. Mm. It's because Lars von Trier is a knobhead.
Yes,
it's a pointless and repellent film, and it exists only to shock and to display von Trier's very obvious misogyny, as all of his films do.
Mm-hmm.
He's a clown.
Now, have you heard about this latest unrated film that's just been released for
the house that Jack built? Yeah,
I mean, everyone's like losing their shit about it.
Yeah, because it's got Matt Dillon basically shooting women, murdering kids.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah.
Just your average Tuesday
night
film.
Why do that?
Film.
Career suicide. He's doing all right for himself.
Who, Matt Dillon?
Oh, I thought it was Matt Damon.
No.
That would have been all right. I was like... Matt Damon. I thought, why is he doing that sort of stuff?
No.
Oh, okay.
He wouldn't go anywhere near a Lars von Trier film, but no one should. But Antichrist, I only watched it because I heard about the fox thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to see a fox saying, Chaos Reigns.
Then you got some more goodies.
That scene as well, they're just filming that penis erect, and they pause it for too long, and it's too still. But the fox looks so weird. It's like it's like something that you'd get from like a sort of Tim Burton-y sort of film, but it's just weird. I didn't like it. And what's the main actor in it called?
It's Willem Dafoe, isn't
it? Yeah. He should know better, because I like him. I've got a lot of respect for him, but he must have just gone, oh, I'll have some money, or I'll do something a bit wacky.
Yeah.
Horrible film.
Well, like a for a dare.
I don't know. It's just he doesn't need to do that.
No.
Does he?
But he's kind of an arty guy, I think. I think he likes his art films, but there's art and then there's shite.
Yeah. Art and farts.
You know, if his aim was to get people talking, he should be happy to know that 9 years later, the UK's premier movie podcast is talking about it. So, success.
It's all worked out for him in the end.
Yeah.
Success!
Top that one then, Jem.
I'll try my best. I'm going to go for an indie film from 1998 called The Last Broadcast.
Oh,
the name's familiar. I might have seen this, but I can't remember.
Now, this is apparently the film that inspired the Blair Witch Project.
And
in a way, it kind of kickstarted the found footage genre at the start of the millennium. And it's about a filmmaker who delves into the disappearance of a local TV crew who are tracking this mythical creature called the Jersey Devil. And I remember I watched this for the very first time when I was about probably 17, 18 years old. It was on Channel 4 one night. And I just remember it looked so shoddy, looked really lo-fi. I thought it was a real thing that, you know, they were just broadcasting for shits and giggles. And it has that very formulaic documentary feel to it. So it's like, you know, what happened? They're interviewing people, getting experts on the scene and replaying footage that was found where the bodies were. And the first half seems pretty much like that. You're plodding along. There's poor graphics. There's missing people who don't really... You don't really sympathise for them, so why should you care that these people were missing and later found murdered? But as the film goes on, it starts to develop this very unsettling and very eerie tone, and you can't quite put your finger on it. The direction of the whole story starts really going into possible evidence, and they're saying, look, I think we know who did this. It's not just this creature that apparently mauled them to death.
Let's get to
the
end.
It is somebody. But... I don't really want to reveal the ending because
you just let us on,
Grace.
No, no, no.
You spent 20 minutes telling us the whole plot, but you're not going to tell us the ending.
Only reason I don't want to reveal this ending is because it's a real gut punch. You really don't expect it. Upon a rewatch,
can you just
you
tell
find
us
clues. Do you really want me to tell you?
You just told us so much.
Oh, fine. The filmmaker did it. The filmmaker did it.
Twist.
He killed them, and a lady that was helping him out, he decides to suffocate her and dump her body in the same spot where he killed the other lads. But there's so many clues that point to him that you don't realise until after a rewatch. But it's so budgetless, but it's so creepy at the same time.
I mean, if it was lower budget than the Blair Witch Project, it must have been made for about £4.
It looks like it's made on Microsoft Paint.
Birdemic style.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's a great Switch that, unfortunately, has been played to death since.
I've never seen it, but I do remember reading about it when Blair Witch came out and people saying, oh, they've just nicked the whole thing, basically.
Massively. And this is miles better.
I've seen people talking about it on Twitter as well, and a lot of people saying how great it is.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Really, really. And it's only now a 20 minutes, Mark.
I'm still not going to watch it. It could be half an hour. I'm still... I don't know. I don't want to...
I think you'd
enjoy
it.
Now I know the ending, I'm all right.
Well, I did warn you.
Yeah. I'm not going to watch it either. Okay. But, you know.
My first one is Irreversible.
Oh,
I
Christ.
Knew you were going to have this.
I would have bet my mortgage on this.
God damn. So this was directed by Gaspar Noé, and it's absolutely... It's horrific, okay? It's honest and it's haunting, and it's got certain scenes in this film that stuck with me since probably 8-9 years since I watched it. There's this sound frequency that the director chose to put in for the first half of the film that's meant to make you feel sick as you're watching it. Mm-hmm. It's a very low frequency, but he also has this kind of disorienting camera throughout. So whenever you're watching it, it's that shaky cam trying to make it more intense. Have either of you seen this film?
No, but I'm well aware of the central scene.
Don't bother, guys. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the film starts with this girl called Alex, who's played by Monica Bellucci.
Bellucci,
who's a very good-looking girl.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, in this scene, it's awful because she's raped by a bunch of strangers in an underpass. And then, like Christopher Nolan's Memento, we go in reverse chronological order.
Oh, my God!
Reverse.
Wow!
I can't talk.
Chronological.
Thank you very much. I was doing all right.
Crudge along a canada.
You know that.
And how the night unfolds. So we get to see how it led to that scene. This scene, I'm sure you've read about, is mm-hmm. the most horrible, disturbing. It is one of those scenes that you don't want to ever see again. It's harrowing. And I know this topic was always going to have a low tone, and I've got to get it out there straight away. Don't watch it. So people listening going, I listen to Skip to the End. This is kind of a warning not to watch this film. It's very well acted, and it's actually technically a really good film, but this subject and this start is horrific. And the second scene that sticks with you is the revenge. So we see this guy being dragged into a club, and he's being beaten up, and we see this fire extinguisher taken off the wall, and he's literally pelted in the face. Now, you know, we talked recently about A History of Violence and that scene with the jaw. Mm-hmm. This makes that look like Disney. You see his face being crushed with every strike of this fire extinguisher. That scene, I'm not exaggerating, is a few minutes long. It's not like, it's disgusting. His jaw's dropping off, his face is being caved in. It looks the most real kind of practical effects you've ever seen, and it's disgusting.
Yeah.
So don't watch it.
No, I've no desire to.
It's horrible.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because when people talk about this film, they almost only talk about it in regards to the rape scene, because it's like 9 minutes long or something.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And then sometimes they'll talk about the revenge as well. I wonder if this film didn't have those central scenes. Is it a good film above and beyond those? Is it a film that people would still be talking about
Definitely.
If it didn't have those scenes?
100%. The acting's really, really good, and it's actually really well directed. Mm. It's just... Do you know what? It probably isn't even offensive, is it? It's just very honest and very real. Yeah. Like, they're not making it all Hollywood. Like, there's someone being raped and we hear it. You see it. So he's making you realise how bad this is. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe the director deserves some credit for actually showing you how real and how much it can affect you in life.
Yeah.
And included in the revenge, you think that's not just going to be one thing where it's one strike and the camera pans out. It's almost like an eye for an eye.
Yeah. So maybe it deserves some respect, but I can't ever sit myself through that again. And I saw it come up a lot on social media.
Yeah.
People don't need to see this film again.
I'm just going to leave it to the listeners
to watch. It disturbed me on another level. Can you give us something nice now, Ben?
No, I really can't. But I'm going to give you a film that I would be very surprised if either of you have seen. It's a film called Wetlands.
No.
So this is a German dramedy from 2013, and it's undoubtedly one of the grossest films I've ever seen. It's about this young girl who has no interest in bodily hygiene, especially with regards to her genitals.
Oh, God.
So one of the things she likes to do is to rub her vagina on filthy public toilet seats.
Oh, my God.
Just for shits.
Can't I wasn't expecting
just,
this.
Just for shits and giggles.
Can't she go horse riding
Mate,
instead?
Tip of the iceberg, right? So she even dabs what she calls, this is her words, not mine, what she calls pussy mucus on her neck rather than perfume.
Oh, new from Chanel. Vagine. Fucking hell.
Jesus.
But the film is completely unflinching about every bodily orifice and bodily discharge. So there's a shot, there's a bit where she's got hemorrhoids, so she has to apply this hemorrhoid cream by sticking a finger up her ass, and the camera follows her fingers into her anus.
Jesus
of course it
Christ.
Works.
Yeah, you know, as you do. There's another scene where she and her best friend swap used tampons.
Oh my God!
And then rub the blood on each other's faces. This, as I said, this is like a dramedy. This is a comedy film in parts. There's also a scene where a bunch of dudes wank on a pizza.
Oh, okay. Is it a bit like the biscuit game, but whoever misses eats it?
Kind of, yeah.
Oh,
but
nice.
The interesting thing is, it's done in slow motion with opera music behind, and it's this soaring, powerful scene. It's actually really well done. It's a surprisingly impressive bit of cinema that's dudes wanking on a pizza.
Maybe they didn't add the extra cheese on the menu.
Was it?
Oh, Gemma.
Was it
knob cheese?
Was it done by Deacons?
he didn't do the cinematography on this, no. He wouldn't touch this one.
Jesus.
I'm led to believe that the film and the book on which it's based have strong feminist messages.
There's a book!
Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty good.
I must admit that I missed the feminist messages because I was just constantly dealing with these vomit-inducing images. All that being said, though, as gross as it is, it's actually a pretty good film.
Yeah.
Because it's about this... You would loosely put it into the category of coming-of-age movies. So we could have had it in the last topic. But it is about this girl sort of finding her place in the world and dealing with the shitty childhood she'd had and, you know, coming to terms with herself. So it's actually quite a good film. It's just really fucking gross.
Yeah, then swapping a Lilette with a Bezzy mate.
I just want to know, how did you find out about this film?
I remember, I think I read about it in Empire or something. I read about it either on a website or in a movie magazine saying that it had been at, I think, a German film festival and saying how people reacted to it. They loved the film, but everyone was saying it was the grossest thing they've ever seen. I was like, I've got to see that. I've got to see it. So as soon as it became available, I think I saw it on video on demand something like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah.
I was like, this is fucking weird, but actually good. This, you know, to book the trend of the other films we've discussed so far, I would suggest people go out and watch this. If they can find it, watch Wetlands, because it's
very, very odd.
quite good.
I knew this topic would be different. I was expecting us to be talking about some weird stuff, but getting your own vagina fluids and putting them on your own neck is just a bit weird.
And she gives herself an anal fissure because she tries to shave her she tries to shave her bum beard, but does it too vigorously. It's and then she, oh god.
Anyone in it that we know of?
No, they're all just like young German actors.
That's a shame.
Yeah. Oh no, Matt Damon's in it. I forgot.
I'm glad we can laugh about stuff like this.
Yeah.
Have you got anything nice?
Well, there's no bodily fluids in my next choice, but it does disturb me. It's a film we reviewed a few years ago, Passengers.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh. Chris Pratt, Jennifer Lawrence, why? We all know what it's about, a spaceship in the galaxy just floating around, and then Chris Pratt's pod starts malfunctioning and he wakes up, gets a bit lonely and decides, oh, she looks nice, wakes her up too and fucks up her future.
Yeah.
Now, Chris Pratt, we love him. He's Star-Lord, he's Andy Dwyer, he's a bloody good laugh, we love him. Jennifer Lawrence, some of us like her, some of us don't.
Not a fan at all.
However, my God, Chris Pratt, I never thought I'd see the day where he would come across as a tiny bit rapey. Mm. The fact that Jennifer Lawrence's character later on calls him out for it is fantastic, but here be the twist, she falls in love with him. Now, if that ain't Stockholm Syndrome from Beauty and the Beast, I don't know what the fuck is. It's just really disturbing that these Hollywood actors, these big Hollywood actors, are cool about sending this message that, yeah, you might have messed up my whole being of life and everything, but hey, shall we just grow old together? No, it's not fucking fair. It's just ridiculous. And the whole film, we didn't like it, did we?
No, he killed her. He subjected her to a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Because he fancied a bit.
I just wish that she kept bashing him over the head with the pole and then that be the end credits. But no, we had to watch them fall in love.
It was so short-sighted of the writers and the director to think that people would be fine with it and go, oh, isn't that a lovely love story? No, it's not. It's fucking nasty, man. It's gross and rapey.
I never felt so uncomfortable watching a Hollywood blockbuster.
I'm surprised they actually agreed to it because it did all right as well. People were raving about it. I really enjoyed that.
It was a worldwide
success. Did you not see the same film we did?
Yeah.
We were all actually just sickened.
Angry.
Yeah, angry.
We all gave it like, what, three out of
generous.
10.
That was us being kind.
Yeah.
They should know better. They're good actors. Mm. They didn't need to do that film.
Yeah, no. But that kind of message doesn't need to go out on a big blockbuster Hollywood film.
I want to just not talk about it, if that's all right.
Let's move on.
If you want to hear us talk more shit about this film, go back and find the episode we reviewed it.
This is one I hope you haven't seen, and I'm sure you both haven't, a Serbian movie.
Never.
Isn't it a Serbian film?
I don't know, it might be, but it's a Serbian film.
We'll never watch in a million years.
It is the most disgusting, disturbing film I've ever seen. But when everyone told me it's the worst, most disturbing film you're ever going to see, I had to believe it.
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know when you drive past a car crash, you just got to have a look. You do. That's not being wrong. You just got to have a look. You shouldn't, because you don't want to see some mutilated body or some arm off. But you just want to have a look. And when everyone kept telling me this is the most horrific film of all time, I had to do it, and I regretted it.
Curiosity.
I like how that analogy you used there actually made sense and didn't involve sweets.
You know when you've got a Haribo.
Yeah. And you're eating a penguin.
Yeah.
Oh, seal bar, not penguin, remember. Basically, the gist of the film is a porn star agrees to basically go back and participate in one last art film. When he gets there, and it's basically going to give him a clean break, so he'll have money, he'll have enough money for his family. When he goes into the actual business to make the film, it's a paedophile, necrophilia, snuff movie.
All the hits.
All the hits. All them. Now, this is the one that I'm going to literally try and get through in 1 minute, and then we'll put it to bed and we'll never talk about it ever again.
Good luck.
So, they fobbed it off as this artistic piece of work. It's meant to be political and a piece of art. It's not. So where I just gave a bit of credit to Gaspar Noé in Irreversible, I give no credit to the director of this film. He's an absolute fucking mental. He's an arsehole, and he's just causing offence in a way that he's just doing it to get people talking. And it's worked because it's rated as the most horrific film of all time.
Yeah.
The two scenes that stuck with me that I never want to talk about ever again after today is raping a newborn baby, which is horrific, and raping a young boy. And then when they reveal and take off the hood of his face, it's his own son.
Mm-hmm.
That is all I'm going to say. Never ever watch this film. It had to be in my list because I couldn't leave it out because it was the most disturbing thing I've ever seen. Ben, move to you.
Well, I don't want to move on quite yet. I've got a couple of things I want to say. No, the thing about the when he's, you know, shagging a newborn, they even call it newborn porn,
that's
don't they?
Disgusting.
Which is absolutely vile. But to talk about the director, he has claimed, like you say, he said it's political. He's claimed that it's an allegory for the shit that the Serbian people have been put through by their governments and all this kind of stuff. It's like, well, you could have done that in another way.
Yeah.
You didn't
have
to show babies being raped.
No. Yeah.
There are other ways to do satire and allegorical stories.
Yeah, have a chat with Armando Iannucci.
You know, we'll call that draft one. Do a second draft, see if you come up with something better.
I don't know how it got made. You've got to see it, though. Do you know what? As much as I don't like... No, not to the listeners, but to you two. I kind of want you to say you've then done it. It's something you've got to tick off a list. But I wouldn't encourage.
No. And it'd probably put you on a list.
Yeah, it's not good. But I had to do it. I'd watched it with Boob, who came on there, and we're both so kind of intrigued. You just had to, because I thought it's never going to be that bad. It was worse.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now can you save me, Ben?
So my final pick is We Need to Talk About Kevin.
Oh my God.
Excellent choice.
It's the story of a sociopathic kid and how his mum struggles to deal with him up until he commits a high school massacre. And the thing that makes this film so disturbing to me is it feels so damn real.
Yeah.
There's nothing fantastical and weird about a high school massacre because they're very real to the point where we've almost become desensitized to them. Yeah. How often does it happen now that there's been a mass shooting in America? And how often do they take place where children are?
Yeah.
It's absolutely shocking.
Yeah.
But to see a dramatic portrayal of that that's so unflinching and that pulls no punches, it's very powerful and very disturbing. It just hits so close to home. Even though his weapon of choice is a crossbow, which is kind of weird compared to the guns that we're used to, it's such a powerful, heart-wrenching, hard-to-watch film. And a lot of the credit to that has to go to Ezra Miller, plays the kid. He's magnificent as Kevin. He's utterly terrifying as this sadistic little bastard.
Yep.
It's the reason why I struggle to watch Ezra Miller in things now, because I always see him as Kevin. I'm trying to watch him as The Flash, mucking about as The Flash in Justice League, and I'm like, you know, don't let him near a crossbow.
Yeah.
He's a little fucker. And also credit to the couple of little kids who play younger versions of Kevin, because they're even little fuckers as well.
Horrible.
But it's an absolutely brilliant film. I know you've both seen it. You talk to me about it, Gemma.
Just left me dead inside. You know, the fact that anybody could do this, and we see obviously that the upbringing of Kevin and what could have attributed to his actions at the final segment of the film. But it just left me, fearful for sort of, what happens if I have a kid and I treat it in a particular way where when it grows up into Kevin's age, would my actions then denote what happens to the kid later on in life? And it's terrifying because there's no yes or no answer.
Mm-hmm.
Was he born with it? Was he born with this evil resonating inside him? Was he groomed to have this evil? We don't know.
Nature or nurture.
Exactly. Yeah. And Lynn Ramsey she completely did it in a way that was watchable, but at the same time, you know, you had to have some kind of opinion and some kind of feeling, which Kevin didn't.
I got to give credit to Tilda Swinton as the mom, because all the way through, I sympathise for her. And the way that her and Kevin are around each other is so awkward. Even when they go out for a meal and just try and do something like a normal mother and son would do, he's picking his food away, he's being an arsehole. Everything he does is making me want to punch him. The way he is with his little sister, he's got this nice little bond, and you think, oh, he's actually not that bad, and then he kills her pet.
Yeah.
And you think, you absolute arsehole. But the scene that sticks with me more than anything is when we go back to the house. No, not that one, Gemma's reaction. And we see the family all dead in the garden. And this ties in quite nicely with Wreck-It Ralph.
Yes.
Hand in hand.
Because the father's played by
John C. Reilly.
And you wouldn't expect him to do such a serious role.
Although the thing is, he used to be an incredibly serious actor, and then he started palling around with Will Ferrell.
Muck about. But this was in the middle of stuff like Step Brothers and all these great films. So to do this was harrowing. But the one scene that Gemma was just implying at is, he gets caught masturbating in his bedroom, and instead of stopping and pulling the cover like anyone else would, I'm not talking from experience, but you know, he carries on, looks his mum in the eye, and goes faster. And that is pretty fucked up, to say the least.
Yeah, just a bit.
It's a great film, though.
It is.
An excellent film,
Dude, I need to watch that again. That was going to be a rewatch on one of my lists at some point. Maybe we'll have to do it.
We'll come to it at some point.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well, my third and final choice, Funny Games.
Oh,
do you know what? I had that on my list at one point,
And I'd like to point out, this isn't the American remake, the sham of the remake. This is the original German version from 1997. And I'm just going to say the line, why are you doing this? Why not? And that tells you everything you need to know about this film. And it's about a family who get a knock on the door from a young lad asking for eggs. Now you think, oh, that's nice and innocent. That just sounds like a japes. No. His mate comes along and they look like just white, young, preppy, privileged boys that are probably just going to get some eggs. But no, they decide to torture the family slowly and surely, but with so much charisma. Now, this is where I find the film absolutely disturbing. Again, it kind of like what I just mentioned with We Need to Talk About Kevin. These are two kids that basically you would just see them on the street. You wouldn't give a second thought to them. You wouldn't think that they would have these maniacal and murderous tendencies within them. But also, what really gets my goat about this film that really chills me to the bone is the fourth wall breakage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Now, there's three versions that this happens. It's when he's asking the mother to find the body of her dead dog and he turns to the camera, does a little knowing wink going, she's going to find it in a minute. Number one. Number two, he bets them that they are not going to live till the morning. He turns to the camera and he says, what do you guys think? Do you think they'll live or do you think they'll die? But number three, and this is probably the one main bit that everybody knows so well about Funny Games, the mother finally gets an opportunity to grab the shotgun out of his hands and kills his bezzy mate. Done. Brilliant. What does he do? Where's the remote? Grabs the remote, rewinds it, prevents it from happening, kills her husband and shoves her down in a lake.
Yeah, just rewinds the film.
Yeah. But it is so disturbing. There really is no remorse for what they do. And hey, you're thinking there might be a better and happy ending? Nuh-uh. They go to the next cabin and then we just see them slowly go back into what they've just done to the existing family. Terrifying.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And you mentioned there the Sham remake. I see the remake isn't really a sham because it was directed by Michael Haneke, who directed the original. Right. So he remade his own film shot for shot for American audiences. It's not quite as good because the original's always going to be better, but it's not that bad. But I was living in Birmingham when the American remake came out, and I was sort of seeing this girl at the time, and she was really into rom-coms. So I took her for a date night to go and see this film.
Jesus
she
Christ.
She was furious. We didn't last long after that.
She wanted to go and see 13 going on 30 or something.
Yeah. I took her to see Funny Games.
Fucking hell.
It's a funny game.
Oh, it's a good day.
Jesus Christ. An amazing film, though. Like, it is. We've talked about films. I don't want anyone to watch a Reversible or a Serbian movie. Definitely not a Serbian film. But I would actually love people to go and watch Funny Games because I think it's a fucking amazing movie.
Yeah, well, spoiler, this is going to be one of my rewatch choices next year.
Oh, stay
tuned.
It's
on my list. Excellent. It's on my list.
Yeah, amazing. Well, I think mine have been a bit heavy. They're very just gross. So I'm going to actually finish on one a bit more lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 1990 film Arachnophobia.
Yeah.
So, Mum, I know you listen to this podcast because you always text me every week and say, nice podcast, or, you know, you comment on the film.
Did she say Hermione right?
My mum and dad decided to take me and watch this when I was 8 years old. Now, this film was a PG, and I don't care what anyone says, this film shouldn't be a PG. Yeah. It's funny, but it's also absolutely horrendous. Now, we know the story. Basically, this South American breed of spider goes in a coffin, gets bred, and kills a whole town. But the cast itself is great. We've got John Goodman as the exterminator, who's amazing at everything he's in. And we've got Jeff Daniels. Now, those two together, they're just what you want. But I'm sorry, this film's not nice. And it's now been, oh God, 28 years since I've seen this film. That's bad. And I can never, ever put on a pair of slippers. I can never go for a wee in someone else's toilet without looking under the lid to see if there's any spiders. I can't sit and be comfortable taking a poo. And it's all because of this film. It disturbs me that much. I check everywhere I go to see if there's spiders. I am an arachnophobic because of this film. It is done with real life spiders. Obviously, we didn't have big CGI ones, which you'd have now in a remake, or silly like. Is it Eight-Legged
Freaks? Eight-Legged Freaks, David Arquette.
They just get loads of fucking tarantulas and let them terrorise a house. We see granddads die and it come out of their mouth and ear. We see families terrorised. And that's why I will never go to Australia. It's true.
Do you know what? It's all bloody spiders and snakes there, isn't it?
I wouldn't do
it. Oh, yeah. They've got tattoos and everything.
I just wouldn't do it, honestly. I would never go there. I don't wear slippers now. I just can't think of putting slippers. I walk around my house either barefoot or with socks because I will not put them on. Because if I put it on and it bites me and I die, the film's warned me.
He's such a Neanderthal.
But I think you need exposure therapy. I think you need to have someone put a tarantula on your head and just deal with it.
No.
Idea. Let's get Benny dressed up as a tarantula. No. On the next episode when he comes up next time.
No. Yeah. But this film is actually quite funny, but it's actually scarred me. And Mum, You messed me up, man. Honestly.
That explains it.
Yeah. That's all because of this
Finally.
Film.
Finally.
Now you know reason for everything. There.
But it's actually quite a good fun film. But yeah, I don't like it. What's your fears, guys? Have you got any?
Not really.
No?
No.
Running out of beer?
Yeah, that is terrifying. Yeah.
The world runs out of beer.
Oh, God, imagine. I'd top myself, I think.
Gemma, you got any fears?
Loss of self-esteem and never getting it back, but hey.
Stick around on this.
Stick around.
That's a bit deep.
Yeah, well, lie down on the couch. Let's work it through.
Jesus. Well, I'm glad we ended on a bit of a high.
Yes.
It was getting a bit
Easy
too.
For you to
it
say.
Was getting a bit deep, that was. That's what she said. Right then.
Social media.
Yes, yeah, save us.
They have come up with some corkers. So I'm going to start off with Twitter. Broxton8R at Broxton8R said, Martyrs, the French version.
Now, horrendous.
Never seen it.
Neither have I. Mark, what's it about?
The person is skinned alive. And instead of just leaving them and letting them die, they just keep taking these layers of skin off. And the way it's done, the practical effects are horrendous. So they're lying there, still conscious, but they're being skinned alive. It's absolutely horrendous.
Yikes.
Sounds like Serrano Ham.
Yeah, exactly like that.
They also said a Serbian film.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And Calvaire.
Don't know. Sounds like a type of thing you'd order at a restaurant. At Bella Italia.
Ooh.
That's Bella Italia. Are they still going?
Yeah,
yeah, that's all right.
The Ginch at Paul Ginch said, Street Trash.
Never seen it.
No. Old Boy, the original.
Yeah, big time.
That is horrible.
And Mark, one for you. Eden Lake.
Oh, that would have been my fourth choice.
Was that the Fassbender one that you talked about before? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then Matthew Fitzroy at You Are a Tweet 5 said, A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
I didn't like it.
But his words, pretentious crap.
Oh,
I don't know about that.
That was me on a fake account.
The Death of Stalin.
Yeah, I don't know why it's not really disturbing. It's a great film.
Yeah, well, he said, now, I think you might disagree here, very disturbing to know that this pile of crap reached the stage where people had to waste a tenner on it.
Oh, well, then he has no sense of humour because it's a great film.
Mm. Although he has kind of redeemed himself at the third one. Valerian and a Thousand Planets, or whatever the shit was called. Mm-hmm.
Why did we review that?
I don't know.
Because there was nothing like that that week.
We should have just had a holiday.
Yeah. Then we're over to Facebook. Damien Bullock.
Hey.
Tears of Sun. And he said, it disturbed me because the mutilation of innocent people that happens like that in real life.
Brutal. Not seen it.
Mm, we'll check that out. Halloween, the original. And he said, it was the first film I saw with a silent killer, the bit at the top of the stairs where he pins the guy to the wall with a knife and just stares at him, still freaks him out. Absolutely.
Yeah, it could happen. That's the thing.
Well, yeah, definitely. And Twilight, because vampires aren't fucking sparkly. Yes, yes. Damien.
True, true.
Yes. Vicky Priest said, Watership Down.
That's awful.
Nasty.
Bloody hell. It, the original It.
Yeah.
Yep.
And Sausage Party. With the massive orgy at the end.
To be honest, that is weird.
What the fuck was that all about?
Yeah, she says she hasn't been able to slip a hot dog in a bun since.
Cheeky.
I bet her husband's happy.
David Roper said Audition. This was going to be my number four, definitely.
Love that film.
Is that with the eye scene?
Get it.
God damn.
Freaks.
Yes.
Very old film.
The circus one.
Yeah. That's not politically right now. There's like deformed children and stuff and they're making a mockery of them.
Yeah, not anymore.
Degrading.
And the third one, Happiness. Now,
oh, that's the pedo one, isn't it?
It is indeed, with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Not seen it.
And then finally, we've got Sarah Jane Thomas said, Requiem for a Dream. Abso-fucking-lutely.
I thought one of you had had that.
Dead Ringers.
Not seen that.
No, we'll check that out. And The Omen 2.
That's a good film.
It is, but it's no Omen.
The thing is, when you know when we always go, oh, social media's been brilliant, I'm going to check that out. Yeah. I'm not going to check any of those out, because they're all going to be horrible.
It's fucking terrifying. But thank you so much for your suggestions, guys. And we love reading them, so keep them coming.
Whose topic choice is it next?
It's my choice. So, wow. That topic was a bit depressing. So, I think we need to be uplifted.
Yeah.
I think we need a hug. So, on the next episode, we're going to talk about our top three movie mums.
Oh, I like that.
We've been to see Ralph Breaks the Internet, the sequel from 6 years ago of Wreck-It Ralph. After teaming up and saving the day 6 years ago, Ralph and Vanellope now find the Sugar Rush arcade cabinet broken. They must travel to the internet via the new Wi-Fi router installed in Litwack's arcade to help repair the game. What follows is a new adventure, delving into the big wide world that they never thought was possible. The film has the vocal stylings of John C. Reilly, Sarah Silverman, and Gal Gadot. So guys, Ralph Breaks the Internet. Has he really broken it, though? And I want to throw it to Mark first.
I really enjoyed that. Mm-hmm. That was a lot of fun. I think it's nice just to go to see a film, though. We don't have to think too much.
True.
It was nice to be surrounded by just innocent kids instead of adults being pricks on their phones. It was quite
That's
a relief.
True, yeah. We were the pricks.
Yes. But as the film itself, I really enjoyed it. It was a worthy sequel. Sometimes like Cars 2 and Cars 3. And like, why are you making this?
Mm-hmm.
But it was nice. And it was a nice reminder of why I love the characters so much in the original. And I had a bloody good time, guys. Mm. It was just what I wanted.
Wonderful stuff. Ben?
I thought it was a fantastic advert for eBay.
Yeah, eBoy.
Yeah, eBoy. Yeah. But beyond the obvious and, I guess, kind of necessary product placement, they couldn't delve into the internet without showing these famous companies, so I guess it was a necessary evil. Mm-hmm. But above and beyond that, it was a good bit of fun. I wouldn't say it was quite as good as the original, but I think the original is a masterpiece of animation. But I really, really enjoyed it.
I kind of echo exactly what you two guys have said. I had a lot of fun watching it. It was a lovely, bright and something that would grab your attention all throughout the film. Of course, when we start exploring the dark internet, the tone gets darker. I think it's a film that's going to age very quickly.
Poorly. It's going to age poorly.
Yeah. I mean, we're in, at this moment in time, we're living in the age of the memes, you know, the very disposable viral hits that we see one day and then never see it again the next day. It's fun. It's certainly not the best film that Disney have come out with, because I did find myself getting a little bit bored in a little bit of it. But great ending. Wonderful to hear Sarah Silverman playing Vanellope again. And yeah, a good bit of fun.
Let's just hop on that thing that you said there about it aging. I think films, especially animated films, need to be timeless.
Yeah.
And this one won't be. It's going to age very badly because technology and the internet moves on so quickly that a lot of the jokes in this and the references and the websites aren't going to be a thing in a decade's time. It's like if you watch shows and films now from 10 years ago that are making MySpace jokes that just aren't relevant anymore. Yeah. I think it's going to fall foul of that. But it's the only problem I have with the film, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, me and Ben, we watched Silicon Valley. Mark, have you watched it yet?
Nope.
Okay, so the opening credits changes as the world of technology changes. Yeah. So you see Napster was in the first two series. It's no longer there now, and you've got new companies there.
Nice.
And I think that's going to be the case of when you're watching, you know, the introduction of the world of the internet, and you're probably going to go, what's Pinterest? Yeah. Don't remember that one.
Yeah. Visually, though, let's talk about that, because their animation is shit hot. It's one of the best out there. And I was sitting there going, I'm so glad we've gone to a nice big cinema, big screen. I'll buy this on 3D Blu-ray. It was beautiful. It looked amazing. And every time they keep higher in the bar, don't they? Every single time you go and watch something, like the first time I saw Finding Nemo and stuff, I was like, wow, this looks incredible. That still looks amazing now, but they just take it. I don't know how they keep taking it to the next level. I was blown away by some of the visuals today.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And one of the things they do so well is that the animation style changes depending on the character they're depicting. Oh. So some of the characters that are meant to be old school 8-bit characters are slower and jerkier.
Yeah.
And then some of the modern ones are more fluid and more beautiful and graceful. It's really brilliantly done.
Like the character in Tappers.
Yeah.
You know, they're just so jerky.
I
and
loved
so
it.
Stop.
Yeah.
But even seeing Chun-Li and Zangief and Bison, all like these fully fleshed out characters. But yeah, I couldn't keep my eyes off Vanellope's hair when you see all the little sweet confetti's just stuck on there, and then compared to the new character of Shank, played by Gal Gadot, which, by the way, loved her voice in it.
Oh man, that one sexy voice.
I was sitting there going, whose voice is this? And then luckily on the way out, Ben was like, that was Gal Gadot. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
But I really liked her character as Shank too. You know, when we're first introduced to her, you think she's going to be this really evil villain, but she's actually a really nice girl. You know,
yeah,
she's looking out for Vanellope, absolutely. Yeah. I love the detail.
Vanellope, for me, is the cutest animated film character since Boo.
I was just about to say, hang on, what about Monsters, Inc.?
Yeah. And we did our top three vocal performances in animated films a couple of years ago, and one of mine was Sarah Silverman as Vanellope von Schweetz, and I would hold now that she is my favourite of all time, because Sarah Silverman has kind of a girlish voice anyway, so to play a girlish character is in keeping with what she does, but she just delivers every line so brilliantly, so it's so cute, it's so funny. There is no better animated vocal performance than Sarah Silverman
and plays. The fact that she's an adult doing that kid's voice so well, it wouldn't be so bad if it was like, oh, here's, we see behind the scenes it's an 8-year-old, you're like, fair play, but it's perfect.
I love the little detail of the red dot on her nose, so it's like a little button nose. It's just so cute.
Listen to us, we've just been talking about the most horrific scenes in cinema history, and now we're all loving her little nose.
She has a cute nose.
Yeah.
What about when she goes and meets all of the Disney princesses?
Oh, you know what, I bloody love that scene so much. And it was great because they kind of play to their own little bits that they've been well known for. So obviously you had Snow White saying about, did she get poisoned by an apple? You had the badass like Mulan come into play at the Princess and the Frog. You had Pocahontas, even the girl from Moana. I really enjoyed that. It was a lovely little bit of nostalgia for the adults, or certainly people that have been fans of Disney ever since.
I think it had two edges to it. So on one hand, it was nostalgic for the adults, but also it was a good message for young girls because they eventually saved the day, the princesses.
They did.
And I think it was a nice message for girls to be self-empowered. The whole gimmick of them is saying, you know, aren't you sick of a big strong man coming and saving the day? In this film, they saved the day for the big strong man.
Yeah, and they did it wonderfully.
Yeah, it's a great message for young girls, and also it's a good message for boys to not be insecure dickheads.
Yeah, because look what happens when your insecurities take over. Yeah. You break the internet. Yeah.
I love it, man. There's some really good messages in there. And I was sitting there thinking, if I had a kid, I'd want them to watch this sort of film and take some good parts away from it. Mm. But I know you had that nice little scene with all of the princesses, but for us guys as well, we got the Star Wars moment.
Yeah.
And we're getting all the old classic game characters. And it's so good looking in the background at all of these amazing characters. And at the arcade machines, I was like, I remember playing that as a kid. It's such a nice nostalgia trip.
This reminded me of it was like a better version of Ready Player One.
Yes.
It was.
It was the same kind of thing. You had all your background characters, you had a really great race sequence.
Yeah.
It was just like a slightly improved Ready Player One. But it's a good job that Disney owns everything. Yeah. Because that's why you were able to have Marvel characters and Star Wars stuff.
Yeah, that scene when they go into the area of Oh My Disney. And it was a case, I mean, they had their cake and they pretty much stole everybody's cake and ate the whole damn thing.
It's a nice reminder they just own everything.
They do.
Like, back off everyone else.
Yeah.
Do you think they'll ever own us?
Probably.
Ooh, if they want to throw some buns at us,
I'll sell it.
I'll take it.
That's Disney.
But again, Ralph, man, one of my favourite characters. And he just reminded me why I love him. Obviously, his voice is beautiful, but he's just such a lovable character. He's not an arsehole. And even when he messed up in this film, which we see, he's only doing it for the love. He's only doing it for the right reasons, but he messed up on a scale this time, which was pretty enormous, let's be honest about it. To put that virus into this game and risk her life and everything, I like the way it was done.
Yeah, I do. I thought that was really brilliantly done. And one of the things I like, I started to get worried maybe a third of the way into the film that it was all just going to be sort of low-hanging fruit internet jokes.
Same here.
So I like the fact that it came back around to gaming. There was a large gaming, because that's what the first film was about.
Yeah.
It wasn't just, ha-ha, here's Pinterest, ha-ha, here's Google. There was a lot of that, but it wasn't just that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the bit where I started getting a bit bored, and I'm not going to say that, you know, it completely ruined the whole film for me, but it's only for probably about 10, 15 minutes. It's when we were delving into the more darker side of the website, when there's the idea of getting this insecurity virus to go into Slaughter Road and basically just decipher the whole program, so it means that Vanellope no longer wants to hang out with Shank and wants to go back and be friends. I did find that a little bit more drawn out, and I thought in a kid's point of view, obviously not us, because, you know, we can hack these kind of things, but I think for kids it might have been a little bit slow for them to get their head around, because they're not familiar with the dark side of the internet.
Yeah.
They're not familiar with viruses and things going wrong. They probably just see it as a place where Peppa Pig lives.
Peppa Pig!
Yeah, he's cool. Absolutely. Yeah.
I take your point. I definitely see where you're coming from, but I also think the beauty of these kind of films is that they're not just designed for the kids. Yeah. There have to be jokes in there that are for the adults.
And I can understand
that. And I think
that
the idea of them talking about the dark web, that was for us, not for the four-year-olds.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
The amount of branding. Now, you were saying about the eBay complete plug, but the Google, like the old school Ask Jeeves guy, I liked that. But the amount of it was ridiculous. I know they have to, because they have to tackle it, but I was just looking at all the YouTube logos in the background.
Snapchat.
All the Snapchat likes, Twitter.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. Yeah. It was worse than iRobot.
I thought they were quite clever with it, though. So, for example, the way they showed Twitter was a load of little blue birds in a tree chirping at each other.
And they were all tweeting like a cat video.
Cat emojis and all that shit.
But it had to be done that way.
Yeah,
but at the point, I was like, Jesus Christ.
I agree. I think one of my favourite things was when Ralph starts to get some viral fame, doesn't he? He's got all these videos out there. And then he wanders into the room where all the comments are.
Yeah.
And it's him exploring the dark side of the internet and, you know, how anonymous dickheads online can say all sorts of shit about you.
I love that.
I thought that was brilliant. Nice, you know, a nice little bit of pointed commentary on the real world, and quite sad.
Exactly. And when Yes comments on it saying, look, you've got to ignore it. It really means nothing. And I think that's a really good message to take away from once the film has ended.
Yeah.
It's like those people that say, oh, episodes aren't very good, and I have to just try and shut down and ignore it and pretend they didn't like it.
There's no such thing. We've never had a single one.
But so many good messages, because right now, they sounds too serious for me, but
no, do it.
Those kids need those messages.
Yeah.
Don't read all the comments that you're going to get, because every kid's doing a vlog now, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Or a YouTube channel or a streaming channel. Yeah. You're going to get people that are going to rip into you. Ignore them, because at least you're doing it.
There's enough shit out there to be chipping away at little kids' self-esteem. They don't need anonymous basement-dwelling dickheads calling them names online as well.
Yeah, and when you finally face up to them, they don't really have a lot to say.
No. Aren't we sensitive sometimes?
What's going on with us?
When did this happen?
Can we go back to talking about disturbing films and spaffing? Newborn porn?
Wreck-It Ralph and spaffing should never be in the same sentence.
No. If you would, it would be here that does it.
Exactly. Although I was a little bit sad that we didn't get Felix and Calhoun again. I think we only got probably about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was I thought maybe we might see a subplot when they decide to take in all of the kids from Sugar Rush. But you know what? I can deal with that, because it was lovely seeing the relationship between Ralph and Vanellope grow even more. And like they say in the film, you know, it's been 6 years. And 6 years ago was when Wreck-It Ralph was released.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been that long.
I know. It feels like a moment ago.
Do you think we'll get another one?
I kind of think we will.
Yeah,
I'd say so.
Because the possibilities are endless for these characters, really. There's anything they could do in that sphere. Mm-hmm. And I imagine this film is making a shit ton of money.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And what about the ending that Vanellope doesn't go back to Sugar Rush?
I like that. Yeah. I liked it a bit Me more too. Brave and not like the happy ending where they actually just settle and think, life's okay here, we're comfortable, we know what's it about. They just went, actually, we're separating you two. That's quite brave.
Yeah, and it kind of, I suppose realism isn't really what we're going for here, but it felt a bit more realistic.
Yeah.
They can't just live in this happy bubble forever. They've got to move on with their lives.
And in my head, I was going, please don't go back, please don't go back. Mm. And she didn't.
Yeah.
I like that. And she was sticking up for herself. She wanted a life for herself, and damn it, she did it.
By the way, we will be spoiling parts of this film.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
Have you seen it yet? So, yeah. I think all in all, I think I've said what I wanted to say. Have you guys said what you wanted to say?
Yeah, I think I've covered all the bases.
Should we score it?
Yeah. Let's do it.
Go on, Mark. You start the things off.
Really enjoyed it. It was just nice to relax and not have to think too much about all these different subplots and all this and talk about all the cinematography. It was a good, fun film. So a solid 8 out of 10.
Ben?
Ditto.
I'll make it easy. I'm also going to agree and give it an 8. So skip to the end. Give Ralph Breaks the Internet 8 out of 10.
Holy cow. Look at all this stuff.
It's competition time! If you listened to our last episode, only 2 weeks ago, not that whole month, it's nice now getting back into it, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
We had a shitload, and I think that's what Ben usually refers to it, a shitload of prize giveaway. So let's just start announcing some winners. We didn't review Fantastic Beasts 2, we just didn't bother, did we?
We didn't want to.
No. But it's supposed to be very good.
Oh, yeah.
It's not really, but anyway, The Crimes of Grindelwald. We had a beautiful bundle from Warner Brothers, and it gave us, honestly, there's toys, there's Funkos, there's a watch, there's a wand, there's a jacket, there's a t-shirt, there's a cap, there's absolutely loads. And we put a real simple question out there, was which Fantastic Beast lives underwater? So Gemma?
That would be Kelpie.
And Lauren Phillips, via email, got that right, and she said it's her favourite film ever. So I'm glad that she's going to be getting that.
Oh, so
the first one, not the new one.
Oh, right.
That would have been a bit too light. Maybe, yeah, right. One of Ben's favourite films, Nativity Rocks.
Oh, I love it.
It was going to be that or Wreck-It Ralph, but he couldn't contain himself.
Can't get enough of Nativity Rocks.
The question to win a bundle, which included a little guitar and Christmas hats and stuff, was what school do the kids attend?
St. Burnett's.
Obviously.
I think everyone knows that.
Exactly. And Megan Edwards knew that on Twitter, so she'll be getting that bundle in the post. And she put a little picture of her and her son and said, he wants a little guitar, so he's going to get one.
Good.
Our good friends at Universal came along with the Grinch bundle, one of our most popular ever competitions online. The retweet one was insane. It had like 3,500 retweets because everyone loves it's supposed to be really good, the new Grinch. I've not got around to it yet. Who directs the new Grinch film?
Scott Mosier.
Yep.
And it's co-directed with Yalow Chaney.
Exactly. And the winner is Emma VD on Insta.
Is that Scott Mosier as in Kevin Smith's little friend?
Yes.
Wow.
He's done really well.
Well, he's directed better films than Kevin Smith now.
He must be a bit annoyed, Kevin. He must be like, Jesus, like, damn, that's
huge. If only he had his hands on the Grinch.
Last Exit to Nowhere came along, and this is a good one. Just choose your own tea that you want to win.
Lovely.
And at @I_got_worms91,
I want to know what that's all about,
has picked the Warriors t-shirt.
Oh,
Warriors.
I've got it under my sweatshirt today.
Brilliant. Yeah. Stop taking your top off. It's not appropriate. Also, they've released a brand new range of beanie hats, and they said, what film left you feeling cold? And Paul McGinley on email said, The Revenant.
Yes.
I can see that. Mm-hmm. I can see that. What film makes you feel cold, Ben?
Oh, I'd have to say Everest.
I like that. What about you, Joa?
Nativity Rocks.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That left me feeling warm and, you know.
Yeah. Ice. Absolute ice.
Next up, we had Richard Sounds, who gave us some AKG N60 noise-cancelling headphones. And they said, what band would you listen to if you won these? And at Silverjarks, I said, Deftones.
Good call.
God, you know how to win prizes. Yeah. Either Corey or Deftones.
And Funko came along. They had some Trading Places Funkos, which are really, really sexy. And we got a whole set. And all we said was, Eddie Murphy plays which character? Ben?
Billy Ray Valentine.
It is. And Matt Holdsworth on Facebook will be getting them. And have you seen the actual, I think they've put pictures up this week, the actual Die Hard Funkos?
Yes.
So good.
The set of them is going to someone that told us. Bruce Willis plays which character in Die Hard?
It's John McClane.
It is. And Brad Moores is going to get that on email. And those Funkos are that, you know, sometimes you want to keep some Funkos for ourselves. Like, Sully, if you're listening, we want them because they are really cool.
Yeah. Was there a way that we could perhaps rig it?
We can't. The listeners come first.
Well.
But again, we don't stop and we want to give some more stuff away. So let's get straight to it. With Wreck-It Ralph, we've just reviewed it. They brought out a full range of Funkos. So we've got a whole set of them, some vinyl duo sets and a rock candy for the new film. It's good. Break the internet. Funkos are awesome. And we've got two sets. Let's make it really simple. Who voices the character of Ralph?
Mm-hmm.
I was about to say Ben. Tell me that. That wouldn't work. Yeah. Also, to our good friends at Richard Sounds, they've given us a Yamaha WX010 wireless music system, which is really sexy.
Very cool.
Why don't we ask people to let us know their favourite album of all time?
Nice.
That's a big one. And finally, Last Exit to Nowhere. They listened to the topic and they wanted to submit theirs and put t-shirts for it. So Jamie, who works there, has said his most disturbing film is Event Horizon.
Oh, great film.
We need to do it as a rewatch.
Each time.
Let's say to win their design of their amazing, it's an amazing design for Event Horizon. Sam Neill plays which character in the film?
Okay.
And their second choice was The Witch.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very disturbing film. William is played by which character in that? And here's a clue. He's a bloody good rep.
Okay. So that's all you need to know.
He's throwing a kettle over a pub. What have you done?
So let us know. The best way to answer, because I see this all the time on Facebook and stuff, like, how do I submit my answers? It's really simple. You can go on Facebook and send us a DM. You can go on Twitter and send us a DM. You can write to us on Twitter. You can tweet us. You can send us an email. You can go on Instagram. You can just basically let us know. It's really simple. That's how all these people have won today. And what we'll do, we'll come back in 2 weeks' time and announce the winners for all these fantastic prizes.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a director out of a pot and we talk about our favourite film from that person. On the last episode, we picked out Twisty Man himself, M. Night Shyamalan. I had to think then if I'd pronounced his name correctly, and I believe I have. So this is going to be a really good one. He's very well known for little twists in the tales that he's done, but we've had some hits and we've had some misses. So Ben, I really want to throw this out to you first. What is your favourite film from this chap over here?
This took no thought at all. It's Unbreakable.
Ah.
And have neither of you got it?
No.
I honestly thought all three of us would have that.
No.
Oh, that's tremendous. That's great stuff. This is one of those films that blew me away the first time I saw it, and my love for it has never diminished. It's from the time when Shyamalan could write a twist and it felt organic and believable rather than forced and laughable. That happened.
I'm looking at you.
Yeah. And even though it's about a guy with superpowers, it feels like the most realistic depiction of a superhero I've ever seen. David Dunn, the character played, by Bruce Willis. He's just a regular guy who happens to have powers, powers which he initially denies, that bring him no happiness whatsoever. It's not as if he discovers that he has super strength and then he's going around saving the world and loving life. He hates it. He ignores it. He doesn't want any part of it. And then his arch nemesis, Mr. Glass, played by Samuel L. Jackson. He's another regular guy who just had a shitty childhood and has weak sort of brittle bird bones. So it's all down to a medical condition, you know, not the fact that he got bit by a radioactive spider or anything like that. It feels grounded. It feels human. That's the key word for me. It feels like a human story rather than a superhuman story. The script is beautifully written. It's very sparse. There's not a lot of dialogue. It's surprisingly subtle for Shyamalan. He's not known for his subtlety. He usually smacks you over the head with a cosh, but this one is quite subtle, even when we get into the realms of the supervillainy. The acting across the board is brilliant, especially Bruce Willis. We know this about old Brucey. He's a paycheck jobber these days.
Just a bit. Yeah.
So when he actually turns up and puts the graft in, it's amazing. And he's as far away from John McClane as a character could possibly be done, is this kind of introspective, almost depressed, kind of calm, dark guy. And that's why he books against the powers that he just develops. It's really brilliant stuff from him. But it's the direction. This film, it's all about Shyamalan, this film. The direction is phenomenal. The shot I always come back to is when David Dunn is in the train near the start of the film. And it's when he kind of realises that some shit's about to go down. And he's sort of looking around left and right. And the camera is seemingly kind of on a track, I think. And it just moves left and right slowly with his eye line. And then you come back to sort of... You're in the seats in front of him. And you can see between the gap of the two seats at him. And you see him thinking something's going to go down. And before you know it, boom, the train crashes. I love that. That's beautiful. And the other thing that I love that Shyamalan does in this film, great use of colour. Very, very bold colours. So every time we see Dunn, he's always clothed in green. It's all about the greens with him. And Mr. Glass, it's all about the purples.
Yeah.
And I like the fact we're going to get the film Glass.
Oh,
the
no. God.
And on that, they're playing on the same thing. Those two guys have got that same colour scheme. And then we've got the Beast as well, who's yellow.
Yeah.
So they're kept with those colours, which I think is great. But the thing that's amazing to me, when I was doing my research for this the other day, it came out in 2000.
Whoa.
Can you believe this film is 18 years old?
Jeez.
You know when you always hear your parents going, oh my God, I can't believe it's been that long. Yeah. We're those people now.
Yeah.
Constantly like, have you 18 years since that? It's bad.
If when we went to see this film, if we'd all had kids the same week, they would be adults now. Imagine
Jesus
that.
Christ.
God almighty.
The film would have been pretty shit if we both got Gemma pregnant watching it.
Whoa!
Oh, you meant with our partners.
Yeah,
oh,
stop with right each other. There.
Yeah. Doesn't he look like his dad, Mark and Ben?
So tell me more about Unbreakable, guys. I know you love it as well.
It reminds me of a comic book.
Yeah.
It has that real sort of element to it. But yeah, Bruce Willis and Samuel L. Jackson have really great on-screen chemistry whenever they do share a scene together. You know, they really do epitomise the valley of good and the valley of bad.
Yeah.
And knowing that we are just moments away from Glass coming out, it's going to be interesting to see how they pick up each of their characters 18 years later.
Yeah.
There's always that sort of risk about, well, no, it doesn't feel like David Dunn. It doesn't feel like Mr. Glass. But I really do believe that both of these actors really enjoyed playing these characters. I think they're just going to ease in straight away. And of course, at the ending of Split, when we do see David at the end of that bar.
Isn't it strange, right? I wasn't that bothered. I didn't really ever need anything else after Unbreakable. I was happy. It concluded. I was fine. Yeah. But that one shot of him at that bar for 10 seconds just made me think, give it me now. That's all I ever want.
Yeah, so true. After Unbreakable first came out, it was clearly set up for a sequel. But because he then did a load of shitty films, he kind of lost his cachet in Hollywood. He didn't have the ability to make his passion projects anymore. So fans of the initial film, Unbreakable, all kind of grew to realise it's never going to happen. We're never going to get the sequel, so let's just be happy with what we've got. Let's just accept the fact that Unbreakable was great in and of itself. So 18 years on, to be finally getting that sequel, and it's also a sequel to Split, which was also a very good film.
Yeah.
Tremendous. I cannot wait for Glass.
And it gives me hope we might get Mac and Me 2 one day.
One day,
the same fans are saying we just need to accept.
Yeah.
You know, it said at the end, you know, we'll be back.
Yeah.
They might be.
Exactly.
Never say never.
18 years.
It's literally the same situation. In every way possible.
Like a mirror image.
We say this now, and then Bruce Willis will sign on to it and be Mac's dad. He would right now.
What, with a bunghole mouth?
And Nick Cage would be Mac.
I would love it. I would buy into that. I don't know about you two.
I'm there.
Take my money.
And we will be reviewing Glass on a future episode of the Skip to the End podcast.
Damn straight.
Whatever happens.
Yeah.
Mark, your choice, please.
It's got to be The Happening. I absolutely...
Are you fucking kidding me?
No, crapping
thank God.
No, it's The Village. No, it's not. It's not. For me,
it really was a toss-up between Unbreakable and The Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
It's mine too.
And The Sixth Sense for me is still one of the most timeless classics of all time. I absolutely adore this film. The attention to detail in this movie is like nothing else, and it hasn't aged. I watched it again, and I'm always watching it, looking through the hints throughout. It has great, great rewatch value, which some films, once you know a twist, you're like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You don't need to go back. And then you kind of kick yourself thinking, he was playing with us all the way through. Why did I not spot this? Mm-hmm. And anyone that turns around, and I know I'm going to get heat for this on Twitter, and says, I worked it out 10 minutes in or from the trailer, you're bullshitting.
Yeah. Agreed.
Like, I'm not very intelligent, so of course I'm not going to get it. And even at the end of the film, I think I had to have someone nudge me and went, no, he was dead. Oh, okay.
They even gave us a montage at the end to point it out.
But no, man, like, seriously, the way that it was all set up, it blew my mind. And I remember being in the cinema watching it. No one ruined it for me. There wasn't Twitter and Facebook as much then of people being dickheads going, oh, I've just seen it. And then now, if it was happening, you'd get people going on Twitter and posting that screenshot of the meme and it'd be ruined. But
yeah, or, you know, quite popular podcast giving away the ending. That sort of thing.
But what Ben then said about how beautifully shot Unbreakable is, I think it's just as good in this. I think the directing is absolutely beautiful. The way it plays with your imagination as you're watching it, the way that Bruce Willis portrays that, psychologist is amazing. He's so good. And it frustrates me now that we joke, but he's doing stuff like First Kill and all this crap. Because hopefully in Glass we get that performance that M. Night Shyamalan has got from him time and time again. But him and, is it Haley Joel Osment?
Yeah.
They're amazing together. They and are. He went off the rails and didn't do much since. I mean, we joked and saw him in yoga hose and stuff, but as a child performance, there's not much better.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He pops up a lot in things now.
Yeah.
Silicon Valley?
Probably KFC. Round self.
Mm. But yeah.
but he's a very good actor. Yeah. Still. Mm.
Did you like him in yoga hoses?
Very much so. Arguably my favourite thing in the film.
But it's just a great story. And yeah, come on, Gemma. I don't want to take all your thunder.
No, that's all right. I also love Toni Collette in this.
Yes.
Now, there's some serious independent awards buzz that Toni Collette may be nominated for Hereditary.
Oh,
maybe,
God,
because she's been picking up a few awards. I tell people, ignore that and watch this instead, because I think arguably this is possibly the greatest work she's ever done. Mm-hmm. Really touching as Cole's mother, with that kind of despair, that not knowing how to communicate to her own child and understand exactly what he's going through. And there's a real heart to the end of the film when her and Cole have that conversation in the car, when he says about he sees his grandmother, who was her mother, about how he basically tells her that her dead mother is proud of her. She loves her still. And just that bond that they have together at the end, we finally see so many walls break between both of those characters. And it's arguably Toni Collette's best work. What I also love about this film is the prominence of the colour red. Mm-hmm. Red indicates that there is something supernatural about to happen. We see it with the red doorknob in the basement. We see it with the red outfit that the little girl's mother towards the end of the film wears.
Yep.
She was slowly poisoning her own daughter.
Yeah.
So it with the red balloon before Cole gets locked into like a little cupboard where he's being sort of terrorised by
horrible, that scene.
Oh, it's awful. But it really is just a sheer masterclass of how to direct a film. It's just a shame that The Happening happened. It's a shame The Village happened. Devil, it had so much potential to be great, and it just ended up as a bit of a damn squib.
I think he only produced that.
Yeah,
did he?
Yeah, thank God.
Still shit.
Going back to Sixth Sense and the little girl, wasn't that the OC's Misha Barton?
It certainly was.
Yeah, as a very little girl.
Yeah, very, very little girl.
And that whole stuttering Stanley.
So intense. Stuttering Stanley!
I was reading people's reviews about this film, and it was really kind of... I saw someone put that he like invented a genre, because it doesn't fall under horror, action, or drama. It's like his own world that he creates. Yeah. And you can't actually ever put his films into genres very much, apart from The Happening, which is the genre of dog shit. But, <yeah. laughs> but it's nice to see he's had a return to form, because he was on a very, very shit way, wasn't he?
Yeah, big time. He's brought it back around.
Yeah,
thank God.
Never forgive someone I can never forgive someone who made a tree the villain of the piece.
Glass will be like literally awful.
Glass, ass.
Oh, no, don't even joke. I haven't seen this film in years.
No, I do.
It's got to be probably a decade since I've seen it. I know I love it. I remember loving it at the time, and I must have seen it two or three times back in the day. I'd need to rewatch it.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's so fun as well, because you think, how did I not notice that? Yeah. How did I not notice that he's not actually talked while he's eating with his wife? And there's that whole scene in the restaurant where she just keeps looking up, and you think they're obviously talking, but she never says one word.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, yeah.
Fun fact, you know that guy that's in his underwear at the very start of the film in the bathroom?
Who shoots himself?
It's Donnie Wahlberg from New Kids on the Block.
Is that right?
Wow.
Yeah.
Come to Skip to the End for all your boy band trivia.
I'm here all week, guys.
What's social media? Because that's not too much to choose from.
No, that's true. And a lot of it's shit. So. On Twitter, Mackenzie Lambert at CinemaMac has said Unbreakable. Surprisingly good performance by Bruce Willis. Cleverly deconstructs comic book tropes.
Nice.
Very much so. Now, Paul Lavender on Facebook, he's not given an explanation for this. He's just said, The Happening.
Oh, dear.
So I'm choosing to believe that that was a sarcastic comment.
Yeah.
It doesn't really mean that. If you do, Paul, sort your life
out. It's a joke.
Yeah, just stop it.
On Twitter, Dio Bakir at OdadSoeed has said, I know people will not like my answer, but I love Lady in the Water.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Most people have, Mark. But it's I ever saw it.
Paul Giamatti.
Yeah. It does, and Bryce Dallas Howard.
It wasn't great.
It's a good cast, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I've never seen it, so I can't really judge. On Instagram, Jared, aka Kuda _ Kid, has said, The Village. Absolutely beautiful musical score, Broadway cast, amazing story, and mythical creatures. My favourite movie of all time. Again, I'm thinking, is that sarcasm?
No. But I respect that if it is.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand people liking it. I don't like it, but I can understand people who do. But your favourite movie of all time, dude? Have you only seen one movie?
Yeah.
When there's been things like The Godfather.
Yeah. Anywho,
and Howard the Duck.
Obviously.
Oh, clearly.
On Twitter, Robert at ThatRobster. Some of his movies are questionable, but the man is pure genius. If you're forcing me for one answer, it would be Split.
Yeah.
Fair play, great film.
What an absolute amazing performance from McAvoy. Like, let's just actually give him a moment.
Yeah.
He is unbelievable in that film, and I don't understand why not more people, like, he didn't get an Oscar nod or anything. It was the way he portrayed all those different personalities. That's a skill.
Yeah. But playing what, about a dozen different characters or so?
Well.
Yeah, like from a matronly mother to an 8-year-old kid.
I think because Split kind of flew under the radar, Glass will be significantly more in people's faces. So if he's as good in Glass, hopefully people will give him the props that he deserves.
We'll see.
On Facebook, Lorna Queen agrees with you too. He got it perfect with Sixth Sense and had some massive fails with many others.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. Mm-hmm. The IMDb Journey podcast at IMDb Journey has said, my favourite film is easily The Last Airbender. Twitter has forbid you to finish this sentence. So yeah, Twitter had a meltdown as he was writing that.
Oh, that's a shame.
I think that's only fair.
Well, not what he meant. Yeah.
And so do you want some utterly unscientific analysis?
No, I like this now.
Unbreakable was the most popular by a mile. By an absolute mile. It had twice as many votes as the next best. Signs and Sixth Sense had about the same amount of votes.
I like Signs. I know you're not a big fan at the ending, but...
Well, because Water Soluble Aliens is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, but Joaquin Phoenix is in it and he's good. And Mel Gibson isn't a nutter in it.
That's very true.
But he is in real life. So, you know, you get what you pay for. And of course, there were no actual votes for The Last Airbender.
Thank goodness.
Because that'd be crazy.
So that's been... I've enjoyed that one. It's just making me want to watch Glass.
Yeah, me too.
So, should we masturbate again?
Come on.
Whose is it?
It's mine.
Come on then, Gemma.
All right.
No drum roll.
Please.
Last one of the year, this will be.
Oh my God, really?
Make it good and no pressure.
Ooh. For movie masturbate on the next episode, we will be masturbating over... Stanley Kubrick!
Whoa!
It's time for the rewatch. In 2001, writer-director Richard Kelly released Donnie Darko, one of the trippiest and best existential sci-fi time travel movies ever made. In 2006, he tried to do it again with Southland Tales, with different results. The film follows the fortunes of an amnesiac actor played by Dwayne Johnson, a psychic porn star played by Sarah Michelle Gellar, and a very strange set of twins played by Sean William Scott. There are government conspiracies, prophetic screenplays, holes in space-time, and even Kevin Smith in weird old man makeup. There is something for everyone in Southland Tales. Now, before we get into whether we liked it or not, the question really is, did you understand it? Mark, did this film make any sense to you?
None at all. It was one of the most messiest things I've ever put myself through, and I have no idea still. So when you just started telling me then on the intro, I'm like, oh, right, that's what they were doing. Oh, so that's what that character was. Mate, that blew my mind.
Gemma, did it make sense?
Not at all. I forgot that she was psychic,
yeah.
If I'm honest.
It's not really mentioned that much.
No.
It comes up more in the prequel comics that no one's read except me.
Yeah, I definitely know she was a porn star. Like, yeah. I definitely knew that was that.
Mm-hmm. No one rocks a cock like Kristen Al.
No.
So we're told.
So now I didn't understand it.
Yeah, I've read various theories and websites. As you know I get into
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
I've read all this stuff about it and I still don't really get it.
Really?
To be honest, there's just so much going on. But we'll get into it.
Okay.
The film I know doesn't make a lick of sense, but I love it. I
yeah.
actually love it because it's so fucking weird and I love aggressively weird shit. I love when directors are willing to swing for the fences, even when they fail. I don't want the same safe shit all the time. I like people who have ambition and have the courage to fail. And I would say this is a courageous failure, but I love it nonetheless.
Okay.
Oh, God. So where to begin? Where to begin? I suppose you can't not compare it to Donnie Darko because it was from the same director. It's got the same kind of time travel elements and so on. And that film was weird as shit as well. Let's not imagine,
yeah.
Let's not pretend that was a dead, safe, standard film. And it was also a box office flop, so I respect Kelly for going for it. Let's start from the start then. What do we think? When the film first started rolling, you had Justin Timberlake's exposition at the start telling what was going on. How did that make you feel? What do you think of that?
I thought that, you know, the breakup of NSYNC had really hit him hard.
Yeah, him and Britney on the
yeah, box. He's completely lost it. At one point, I thought the film was going to be on like a Microsoft PowerPoint. I know the graphics were yeah. somewhat questionable, shall we say. And I really tried to get into it. I really tried. And I completely respect the fact that, you know, you find such happiness with the film. Is it really
She's
bad?
Lost.
Is it really bad? The one thing, well, the two things I know about it is something that we'll come to in a bit that I'm not going to mention now.
Okay.
But one of the main things is cars can fuck.
Yes. Yeah. That
Who knew?
With cars humping.
Who
the fuck is that
knew?
About?
You've gone from talking about Justin Timberlake's performance.
That's right.
To cars fucking.
It's a natural flow.
Yes.
Unlike this film, I'm afraid.
Well, my answer, Ben, is that I liked him as this drugged up war veteran. I thought he was really good.
Yeah.
The intro made me very intrigued of what to expect, and I was never prepared for what was to come.
Yeah.
It was messy, dude. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed it, and I don't know what it is about this.
Really?
Because I don't understand what the hell happened. You've got The Rock, you've got Sarah Michelle Gellar, big names. These people are huge, and at the time they're huge. It's not like they're doing it now like some, you know, like Bruce Willis taking money. These people
yeah.
were
yeah.
big actors. But I liked it. Mm. I don't know if... Let's talk about The Rock for 1 minute. I don't
okay.
know if he was
okay.
deliberately trying to be terrible
yeah.
because he needed to be, or he was acting his heart out and he came across as terrible because he wasn't a big actor then. But I loved him. I loved him as this boxer. Was it
Boxer Santoro. Yeah.
I liked him.
Yeah.
I think he was really good when he was playing like the real sort of broody kind of character of the side of Boxer and Jericho. But he lost me when he started playing the anxious card with like sort of spirit fingers for when
yeah.
he got really nervous, and it just felt like somebody said, oh, be anxious, watch this TV show about somebody like losing their shit, and he just used that as a platform. So he did well on particular parts of his characters, but for that I just thought it was a fucking joke.
I give him props because this was the first time he was credited as Dwayne Johnson rather than The Rock, and he was
yeah.
trying to break out of that action movie mold, and I kind of think he was the only person other than maybe Sarah Michelle Gellar who realized that they were in a comedy. This is a very dark comedy,
yeah.
more than a,
yeah.
it's a satire of a mm-hmm. lot of things. And I think Rocky knew that and he lent into it, whereas I don't think other people did. I think they played it too straight
yes.
and that's what didn't really work. I thought he were, even the bit where he's like playing with his fingers, which is so silly, they're the things that made me laugh. You know, think of The Rock near the end of the film when someone accuses, basically they end up being two Rocks. One of them's a clone because he goes through space-time. Blah, blah, blah,
obviously.
Blah. Obviously, as you do, right?
That's
right. And one of the two Rocks dies and they think he's killed himself. And he says, I would never kill myself because I'm a pimp.
Oh, that was
and pimps don't commit suicide. or the bit near the end when he's kissing Bai Ling's character and she says that she's going to do something. He's like, oh no, space-time will fold in itself, you bitch. And he just pushes her on the floor and then walks off with a smirk on his face. He seems to be the only one who got it.
Yeah.
And that's why I love it. As weird as his performance is, and yeah. it does seem terrible, it was intentional, I think.
Yeah. Also, there were some very strange choices of people in this film.
Mm-hmm.
you had Amy Poehler.
Yeah.
Sherry O'Terry, who is Saturday Night Live alumni.
Yeah.
And John Lovitz. John Lovitz. Now, I would never associate him with doing a very straight kind of character, but even the interaction with him and Sherry O'Terry was like, so are we going to sort this out? Are we going to fuck? I was like, well, but I mean, no, it's just...
Yeah, that didn't work for me, John Lovitz, because John Lovitz is known as being a goofy comedian from SNL.
Yeah.
And Kelly has said that what he wanted to do the kind of Tarantino thing of casting people who you wouldn't expect this kind of stuff from them. Mm-hmm. And I get that, but... You know, casting John Travolta, who's been on the outs, as this cool hitman is one thing, but casting a goofy dumbass like John Lovitz as a psychopathic hitman cop.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't work.
No,
man.
Not at all.
Didn't work at all.
It took me completely out of it at that point. I was really invested in this story.
Yeah.
But let's talk about good old Buffy, because Sarah Michelle Gellar, to play this aging porn star, again, it's quite a risky part because she's always played it quite safe. You know, in Cruel Intentions, she's a bit devious and a bit naughty, but this is a whole other level. Like, she didn't care. She went and had fun with it. And I think, like you said then about deliberately The Rock playing and being a bit stupid, she went with it and she tried.
Yeah, well, remember, teen horniness is not a crime.
Teen horniness is not a crime.
No.
I love the fact that her TV show she presents cares about all the big issues of the day, you know, war, famine, poverty, and teen horniness. And again, because she gets it, one of her lines she delivers so impeccably. They're talking about the future, and she says, "Scientists are saying the future is going to be far more futuristic than they originally predicted."
That's so brass eye.
I absolutely love that line, and I think that's why a lot of people came away feeling cold from this, because they didn't notice the satire. It is quite subtle. It's not an out and out laugh out loud ha 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 comedy. It's not like a Will Ferrell film, and I don't think people realised that it was meant to be funny.
Yeah.
So that's why people just look at it like, this is wank. I don't know what's going on. And it is confusing. And it is overstuffed. There's too much going on.
Yeah.
What about those kind of collection of people who have sort of boxes script? Like the little lady from Poltergeist.
Yeah, she freaks me out.
Yeah.
You know?
I was expected to tell him to go into the light, you know.
She's a bit odd.
She's very odd.
I think she's probably dead now.
She is dead now.
That's all right then. But yeah, she's very... she doesn't... It's just weird. I was just looking at it thinking, where do I know you from? Oh yeah, it's that. Why are you involved in this? Probably because the director liked Poltergeist and wanted an excuse to cast you.
But
he probably loved Princess Bride. He's just gone, I love you.
That's true,
He wrote that, the guy, Wallace Shawn, who was in Princess Bride, he wrote that character, Baron von Lufthansa, whatever his name is, he wrote that character specifically for him because he just loves him.
Okay, and I love his voice.
Yeah, and when Wallace Shawn read the scripts, he went, I don't know what the hell this means, but if you've written it for me, I'll do it.
But I found those collection of people probably had the worst dialogue because they were just coming up with so many things that felt really disjointed and it didn't fit in at all with the rest of what was going on. But you know what? I mean, this is to Kelly's, I suppose, credit. He went for something that was really ambitious and something that not a lot of directors would have picked up and gone, yeah, let's just do this, see what happens. But he had a vision, he set it out, and it's there for everybody to see.
Exactly. Let's talk about some of the weirdness, because there's so much weirdness.
Where do we start?
We have to talk about Timberlake. So Timberlake takes an experimental drug, and it's also an energy source called Fluid Karma. And then he goes into this musical number where he essentially breaks the fourth wall. He's looking at the camera and starts lip syncing to, what's the song?
All these things I've done
by the Killers with these dancing girls behind him. Yeah. What?
Why is that? The closest thing that I thought of is like Big Lebowski, when we get that scene of suddenly them going through that. But it was just not, it wasn't in tone with any of the film. I didn't expect him to break out. I thought it might just be a minute of it, but it was going on for the whole song. Like, I got soul. And I was like, okay, this is cool. What the fuck is happening now? Yeah. And the budget and the scale of it is huge. And I'm thinking, that would work in The Greatest Showman, but why is it in this?
Why is it in Southland Tales?
Or if it would have been Brandon Flowers, the lead singer of the band, doing it, that would have been a great music video.
That would have been so good.
Rather than an obscure segment of a film.
Get him doing music videos.
Yeah.
What is he doing now?
Very little.
Yeah.
Because he made this and it flops, and then he made The Box and that flopped harder.
Oh, that was
so
awful.
I believe he hasn't done a damn thing since.
But I do like this scene.
Yeah, it was really well done.
I like it because it grabs your attention. Grab their attention.
Get their attention.
Get their attention.
And there are other really weird things as well. So USident, which is this kind of this company that spies, it's a government department that spies on everyone through the internet. Did you notice that for some reason in the USident, all the workers, there was just a table of dwarves?
Yes, I did.
And it's never referenced that there's just one group of people working who are dwarves.
Yeah, and they're right at the back of the room too, aren't they? Yeah, I noticed that.
How far away are they? And also the whole scene with the monkeys in the fifth dimension. Yeah. I was laughing at that. I was actually quite thinking, we're talking like it's normal.
You're now tuned in to Skip to the End.
Yeah. And what about the bit when the Japanese fella gets his hand chopped off?
That looked good. I like the way that was good, done. Yeah.
He had his little pinky out as well. And it was like, well, you said a pinky. No, actually, I think if you read the contract, it said a hand. And it just went back and forth for 5 minutes.
He says, if you'd read the contract, he says there's a 6-inch deviation. It's just that this is kind of why I love it.
Yeah.
Because it's just, I mean, it's too long and there's too much going on. It tries to be an allegory for the Bible. There's a lot of shit about the Book of Revelation. It's a satire on the military industrial complex and a weird sci-fi comedy all at once. It's trying to do too many things. So it doesn't work for that reason. But there's so much to like, so much you can draw from it. And I genuinely believe the more you see this film, the more you'll enjoy it. Because you'll know what to expect next time round. You're not going to be surprised by it. But you'll start to pull more and more things out of it that you'll enjoy.
2 hours, 20 minutes as well. It's a long. And I think I read somewhere today that there's a director's cut.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So originally it was shown at Cannes, and I think it was about 25 minutes longer, and he got booed out the building.
No.
So Janine Garofalo was in the original Cannes cut as a soldier, and her whole scenes got cut. You see her at one point right at the end, her face in the corner of the screen. Like, why is Janine Garofalo there and has no lines? It's because all of her whole character was cut.
One thing we haven't mentioned, I'm surprised, because we're about 15 minutes into this.
Go on.
Stifler.
Stifler. Yeah. Doing good work, I think,
he
as well.
He did all right, actually. Yeah. And he ends the film. Him. We get the whole final scene with his eye and everything. Yeah. I liked it.
And I think we've always known that Stifler's Jesus.
Exactly.
Because that's basically what his character is in this. He's Jesus.
That's his side story and break-off from American Pie. So it all makes sense now.
What is it about Richard Kelly and people getting shot in the eye, though?
I know.
So Tavener gets shot in the eye in this, like Frank the Bunny did in Donnie Darko.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He loves that image, doesn't he?
Is that like his M. Night Shyamalan twist?
It could be.
I don't remember the box if Diaz got shot in the eye.
No.
Although her kid got blinded.
I imagine Kelly probably shot himself in the eye after that.
Yeah.
Shouldn't have to.
He'll probably make a comeback at some point.
I hope so, because he's clearly an imaginative dude with a lot of crazy ideas. He just needs to focus them, I think.
Yeah.
Which I think he did with Donnie Darko. But even that goes off the rails a bit towards the end. If he focuses his brain, he's a bit of a genius, I think. I really hope he comes back.
A misunderstood genius.
Yeah, I would say so. Mark, Kevin Smith, what do you think?
I'm waiting for you to slag him off, but he did what he needed.
I quite liked
and
him.
I quite enjoyed it.
The weird old man with a big beard.
He had fun.
Yeah.
He went there. You know he's a massive fan of Donnie Darko. He always speaks it's one of his favourite, inspired him, blah, 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 blah. And he's just gone on set as a cameo and had some fun.
Yeah.
And he's done what's needed.
No, I liked him. And clearly Richard Kelly, I was about to say, is friends with directors. He probably isn't anymore. But back then was friends with directors. Obviously Smith's in it. Did you notice the guy who you see for about 2 seconds who gets shot on a toilet was Eli Roth?
Wow. Yeah. I didn't notice that.
It's when the US ident cops break into the neo-Marxist place and they just open a door. There's a guy having a dump. They shoot him in the head and it's Eli Roth.
Oh, I never.
There you go. Things that you notice if you keep watching this film, as I do,
over
weirdly.
The years.
I was quite surprised with the reaction we had online. I imagine when we put this out online, everyone's going to go, oh, that's wank, or I've never seen it.
I was waiting for no replies.
Yeah.
Me too.
But on Facebook especially, we had a lot of people saying how much they liked it.
Yeah.
And that heartens me, man. I like the fact that people are digging this, as weird as it is.
I like that one guy said that he took his missus on a date and said, oh, it's okay, it's from the guy that did Donnie Darko, and got in there. I don't think that went very well.
I think he said to her, you know, it's clearly going to be something you'll like, love, because it's got Justin Timberlake and Sarah Michelle Gellar in. It's going to be a rom-com.
Like female bait.
Yeah. I think we've covered most of the weirdness there, haven't
we? We haven't covered half of it,
but we ain't got all day, have we?
No.
It's one of those films that I would say, listening to us talk about it certainly doesn't do it justice. Seek it out, watch it. I think you can buy it on Amazon for like £3 or
something. You can. And I do think that's the key thing here. I mean, regardless of if you do end up liking it or if you do end up hating it, it does need a watch.
It does need a watch. If you like the sound of The Rock speaking in a staccato voice so he sounds like William Shatner, this is the film for you.
He does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Right. Let's score it.
I'm going to throw it to Gemma first, because I think Gemma liked it the least of the three of us.
Yeah, I did. I'm not going to be watching this anytime soon, but I totally respect why you enjoy it and why you come back to it. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 10.
That's 5 from Gemma. The maths are going to be fucking tough on this, aren't they? Mark, what are you giving it?
I'm quite surprised at how much we've enjoyed it, because we went with the comedy element and we took it for what it was. So it's a 7.
That's a 7 from Mark. Sorry, I'm going to do the maths as we go along. So that's 12.
So it's about a 6 at the moment.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give it an 8, because I think it's successful despite itself, and I love it. It's a good bit of fun. So I'm going to give it an 8, which is 20 overall divided by 3. Let's call it a 7.
Yeah. Seems fair.
So Southland Tales gets a Skip to the End, 7 out of 10.
Right then, guys, it's my choice for the next rewatch, and as we know, our episode will come out just before Christmas.
Yeah.
And I'd hate to ruin the tradition of us picking a Christmas film at Christmas, because it would just, that would just be a shambles, wouldn't it, after 4 years?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to change it, so we'll be watching a Christmas classic. So on the next episode, our rewatch will be National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, yes! Here we go, guys. It's round two of Veggie Bets.
Ooh.
I know. It's going to be Mighty Maniac Mark versus Brawling Bastard Ben.
That's me.
I love those names.
Brawling Bastard Ben.
If I ever go independent wrestling, that's my name.
So I might as well tell you how the game is going to work. The website Rotten Tomatoes is known for its rated percentage score based on aggregates from various reviews. And we are going to use this medium in our game. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a film and its Rotten Tomatoes score. I'll then give you a sequence of other films and you're going to need to tell me whether it's the score is higher or it's lower.
A bit like Bruce Forsyth.
Kind of, but you know, it's Veggie Bet, so it's nothing like Bruce Forsyth, so we're all right.
He's dead as well, so it doesn't matter.
He is, yeah. So with any game, you're going to need to know how the point system works. So, guys, wrap your lug holes around this. You're both going to start with 10 points.
Okay.
But this is because when I give you the name of a film and you give me the answer of a higher or lower Rotten Tomatoes score, you've got to decide how many of your points you want to bet.
Oh,
I love it that I'm doing it. We played last week.
Like,
I'm going, as if I was the one who invented the rule.
Yeah. And I'm sure our listeners have gone, we know the score. We know what's going to happen. But okay, you know what?
Carry on though. So I choose how many points I want to
bet. Yeah, but the minimum bet is going to be 1 point.
Yeah.
And the maximum is up to the points you have. So if you have 8 points, you can, in fact, bet 8 points.
Ooh, what idiot would do that?
Yeah.
What sort of chump would do that?
First one marked.
Whoa. But it's pretty much up to you and how lucky you're feeling at that moment. So
do you feel lucky? Bang.
So when one of you little sausages gets to 0 points, the game's going to end, I'm afraid.
I just got called a little sausage.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the first film and then 10 further films to get the game going. So as you guys are playing against each other's, you don't really want to say how many points you're going to bet.
No, that'd be silly.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you this here many number of papers.
Thanks.
That's right. And this here pen. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
It's like Michael Winslow's here.
And what I want you to do is write down how many points you're going to bet.
Yeah.
But don't show each other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Oh, I was going to. Look, Ben.
Oh,
that's 15. A deal.
What's the point of this game?
Okay, let's. I think everyone knows by now.
We get it.
Excellent. So, shall we get on with the game?
No.
Because I'm ready.
I am.
Right. Here we go. So, the first film I'm going to give is a bit of a new one. It's the remake of Suspiria.
Okay.
Oh, Jesus.
So, on Rotten Tomatoes, that currently has 62%. Whoops. So, your first film. Wayne's World 2.
Ooh.
Now, is that higher or lower than Suspiria? Can you put down how many points you want to
get? While we're just writing down our score, have you seen the remake yet?
I'm seeing it in a few weeks. Oh,
it's supposed to be a bit cash.
Never mind. It's supposed to be gory, though.
Okay.
Well. Okay, are we ready?
Yeah.
Right, so Ben, I want to throw this to you first. What do you think?
I've gone lower and I'm betting 1.
Right, Mark.
I'm going lower and I'm betting 2.
Oh.
You're both winners on this point. Yes. Well done. So
good start.
Good start indeed. So Ben is now with 11. Mark is winning. I repeat, Mark is currently winning the game.
First one.
What the fudge?
Power cut now. Yeah. Whatever happens, it's what I do.
Right, so on to the next film. So we are now going to Wesley Snipes' Blade. Now, is Blade higher or lower than Wayne's World 2?
So what was Wayne's World?
What did Wayne's World get?
Wayne's World was 61%.
Okay.
Okay, so if you want to say if it's higher or lower and put down how many points you want to bet, that would be marvellous.
So hold on, which one was it? Blade or Blade 2? Just Blade.
Blade. Just Blade. The first one.
That's a great film.
Ooh. Isn't it just?
Yeah, definitely needs to be a rewatch.
Mm.
I agree that it is a great film, but I also think people might be idiots.
Oh, I'm liking this. So, come on, Ben.
I've gone lower and 2.
Lower and 2. Mark.
Higher and 3.
One of you is correct.
Obviously.
It's the Brawling Bastard!
Yay!
Bastard.
Okay, so Ben is now in the lead.
See how quickly it changes.
All is right with the world, people. We're fine.
Bet your bets.
Looks like that, my victory's taken.
So Ben is on 13, Mark is now on 9 points. So let's move to the next film. And the next film is Rocky number 3.
Oh,
so remember,
Mr. T, yeah.
Blade was on 54%. Are we thinking Rocky 3 is higher or lower?
Oh, Christ.
Okay, you want to pop what you need to pop on those bit of papers? Lovely. Okay, are we ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Ben.
I think it's going to be marginally higher.
Yeah.
And I've bet one.
He's bet
conservative
one.
Conservative one.
Very smart. Mark?
I've gone 3 points, mm-hmm. and I've gone higher.
Points ahoy, you're both right. Well
hey,
done.
It's all right.
Okay, so we're getting there now.
What's
so
the score, George Dawes?
Mark, you're on 12. And Ben, you're on 14.
Ooh. Okay, it's all right.
Okay.
Still all to play for.
Yeah.
It's all to play for. So now we move on from Rocky 3 to Hulk. The one with Eric Bana in.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, so remember, Rocky is on 65%. Do we think Hulk is higher or lower? Veggie bets. Okay. Ben.
This is the first one where I'm kind of risking it.
Oh.
I think my brain and my heart say lower,
mm-hmm.
but some other part of my body's going with higher, so I'm going higher one.
Higher one. Mark?
Higher two.
You're both wrong.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine.
Hulk came down with 62%.
Oh.
Okay, so now that means the score is Ben is on 13 and Mark is on 10.
Still close,
still
man.
All right, though. Yeah.
Still close.
All right, we're only halfway.
We are halfway.
Wow.
We're about there. So, from one superhero to one wannabe one, Lucy, Scarlett Johansson.
Ooh.
So, Hulk was on at 62%. Do we think Lucy is higher or lower than Hulk? Okay, you ready there?
Yep.
Right, go ahead, Ben.
I think Lucy is marginally lower, and I'm going to bet two.
Okay, Mark?
You got to risk it for a biscuit.
Yeah.
The world's crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going higher.
Yeah.
3 points.
Marky wow. Mark, well done!
That film is so toss.
Yeah, Lucy is not that great
no, it's
at
really
all.
Bad.
So, my God, talk about a seesaw. Mark is now winning with 13 points, and Ben is on 11.
Shit.
Let's hope I have enough films.
God, Lucy is awful. We never reviewed it.
I've still
it,
never
we?
Seen it.
No, that's no,
don't worry
don't
about
bother,
it.
Mate.
No, never mind.
Luke Besson as well.
So we're going to go a little bit more action now this time, guys. The first Mission Impossible.
Ooh.
Old Tommy C. So what do we think? Is Mission Impossible higher or lower than Lucy with 66%? Are we there?
Yep.
Lovely. Ben, what do you think?
I'm getting brave.
Okay.
I'm going higher three.
Higher three, Mark?
Yeah.
Because the world's mental.
Mm.
Lower two.
Mark is storming
shit!
It!
Because I've worked out, Ben, nothing makes sense
know,
on this site,
know,
so just always go with what you
well
shouldn't
done.
Do.
And can you believe that the first Mission Impossible film is not as good as Lucy?
I don't believe
what's,
that.
What did it get? What was it?
Mission Impossible got 64%.
Ridiculous.
So close. So
never
close.
Mind. I just want to update you. Mark is now running away with it with 15 points.
Oh, he's 7 points clear.
Mm.
Jesus.
Shit. Maybe I'll bet seven.
I'm an idiot. Well. Yeah.
And Ben,
9 points all in.
And Ben is on 8 points. So let's stop this. Let's move on to the next film.
Yeah.
Bond. Live and Let Die.
Oh, God. Which one's God. That?
Is
it Timothy Dalton?
Oh, no, it's Roger Moore.
Oh.
One with Jane Seymour, like loads of voodoo and a cracking song by Wings.
Well, this is pure fucking guesswork on my part at this point.
So 64%, remember. So is Live and Let Die higher or lower? Okay, pen's down.
Yep.
Right, Ben, what are you thinking?
I'm playing it safe. I've gone with lower one.
Lower one. Okay, Mark?
Higher two.
I'm going to give this to Mark.
Fire,
well done.
Yes.
I'm getting slaughtered.
66%.
I like that Bond film. A lot of Bond's rubbish, but I like that one.
I love Live and
yeah,
Let
it's
Die.
It's a good film.
It's proper good. So the score's
Ben's
on the
working
door.
Working out how he can win it.
Yeah.
So the score's at the moment. Mark is on 17 and Ben is at 7.
Okay.
10 points different, guys.
Shit.
Is this real? Am I going to wake up in a minute?
Yeah, it's a reality.
Then quit, skip to the end of the day.
So the next film, funnily enough, is our rewatch choice for the next episode.
Weird.
Yeah.
Ooh.
National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. So Live and Let Die was 66%. Are we thinking this particular one is higher or lower? That's higher or lower. Okay, you ready? So, Ben, what do you think?
I mean, I might as well flip a fucking coin at this point. I'm going to go higher, and because I just simply have to, I'm going to bet 6.
Whoa! Yeah. Mark?
I'm going higher.
Yeah. Oh.
5.
Oh, shit! So I'm not going to achieve anything even if I'm right. Balls.
Well, this has just got interesting. It's lower!
Oh, what? This world is crazy.
Right?
Stick around for the next episode to see if we agree if it's higher or lower.
Yes, so believe it or not, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation is at 64%.
That's ridiculous.
Disgraceful.
I know. This is not the world I choose to live in anymore. But the scores on the doors at the moment is Mark's on at 12, Ben is on at 1. So this is like, we are getting down to the cheese wire, guys.
How many shall I bet on the next one?
Oh my God.
So from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation to quirky teen cheerleading comedy, Bring It On.
I like that film.
I love that film so much.
It's all right.
Seriously, I freaking love it.
Yeah.
So remember, 64% was the last one. Do we think Bring It On is higher or lower than Christmas Vacation? Okay, have we got a bet? We do. Right, Ben.
Oh, because nothing I think makes sense anymore. I'm going to go higher, and of course I can only bet 1.
Mark.
Higher. 8.
Just to put the nail in the coffin. Cheers, mate. It's like in football when you beat the goalie, but you still slam it into the back of the net.
Yeah, and then celebrate in his face.
Yeah. Let's order a coffin for Ben. It is lower. Mark wins.
Yes.
Mark wins. Mark wins.
Yes.
Was that the last one?
Yeah.
Oh, shame.
Bring It On was lower with 63%, but I can't believe I'm saying those words. Round 2 belongs to Mighty Maniac Mark. Well done.
I don't know what the hell just happened.
Me neither.
But it's all to play for.
It yes. So that's one win for Gemma, one win for Mark.
Oh my God.
And it's me versus... Oh, no, I'm you're the Games Master.
Yeah, it's me versus Pooch next time.
Jesus. Mm-hmm. So it might have to come down to... If you win the next one,
yeah,
we're all equal.
Yeah.
We can't have that.
I'm the Brawling Master, so I'll just beat you to death. Oh,
yeah. We'll have an arm wrestle live on the podcast.
So what we're going to do? Come back in 2 weeks and I'm the Games Master?
Yep. Sounds like a plan.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too.
See how I didn't join in?
It's nice. Yeah, I was thinking of changing the word just to fuck you over. Just remixing it.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've got some great stuff this week, though. Pooch, what have you got?
I've got a drink.
A drink?
Oh, drink, yeah. This is going to be a complete shameless plug.
That's water.
Yeah. It's a gin.
Oh.
And it's a gin from my home county of Northamptonshire. So it's not just Weetabix we're known for.
No.
We're known for some good quality gin. So it's Warner Edwards Gin.
Oh.
They're located in a small little village called Harrington, which is probably about half an hour-ish around where we are right now. And they distill their own gin and they distribute all across the country. So basically the other night, myself and my good significant other went on a tour to Warner Edwards Gin.
Nice.
Got to taste some sweet, sweet gin as well. And it was very, very tasty and yummy. And they had a really good selection on offer. So things like rhubarb gin, honey gin, sloe gin, very nice on its own, but also with a mixer, if you're inclined that kind of way.
Yeah.
But they're the first ones who kind of kicked off the rhubarb gin market, and everyone else is copying it now. So it's all down to Warner Edwards. They do hold tours that you can go and taste their lovely gin and have a little wander around their farm. You can go on their website, which is www.warneredwards.com, and indeed purchase some gin too. And with Christmas coming up, I thought, you know what? We recommend, you know what?
She just wants a free crate of gin. I'm loving this.
As do I.
Using the podcast.
As if we've never done that before.
Anyway, back to my Smirnoff cider.
But with Christmas coming up, you know, we've got plenty of things to go and watch, plenty of things to go and listen to. But you always think, after a lovely Cold Brothers cider, you want to mix it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Grab yourself a Warner Edwards gin. Put some ice in. Put a little bit of tonic water in. Maybe a garnish if you're inclined that way. Sip away. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Might bloody have to now. Tell you what, after
sounds
that,
good.
After that sales pitch.
So that's
Warner Edwards Gin.
Yeah, are you on commission?
No!
Are you sure?
Next week, you see a bloody quids in.
No, they did a really good tour the other night, had such a good time, and I thought, you know what, they do bloody good gin.
But I went to Pizza Hut a few weeks ago and had a great buffet, but I'm not going to sit here and talk about it on an episode.
I mean, we've eaten a great tube of Pringles throughout this episode, but I wouldn't mention that live on air
Texas
at all, would
barbecue.
I? You know, Pringles, that's Pringles. Pringles, I say Pringles.
That's how good this gin is.
I've drank some mandarin pink grapefruit Smirnoff cider.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's not Brothers.
No.
But what I didn't tell you both is that on the next episode, they've sent us a crate of toffee apples.
Oh, so, yeah. Ding dong.
Merry Christmas.
We can
Christmas.
Make some like mulled stuff. We can put some cinnamon in and heat
oh,
it up.
Oh, stop
we'll
it.
Do it.
Imagine that. Gin's really the in thing at the minute, isn't it? Everyone loves
it's
gin.
Everywhere.
Like rhubarb gin you just mentioned there. Mm-hmm. There's a few companies do like Parma Violet's gin yeah, and oh, all this kind of wacky shit.
It's really good stuff. The Violet gin market is like screaming at the moment. It's yeah. everywhere. But
people are digging it, man.
And there's loads of tours that you can go to, not just at Warner Edwards, that's Warner Edwards, but they also do like loads of festivals all throughout the country, all throughout the year, and it's definitely worth checking it out.
It's a bit hipstery, isn't it, at the moment? I love it, but everyone's like, oh, what are you yeah. drinking? Oh, I'm having my gin. Yeah. What one? Well, I've got elderflower and flamingo fruit juice and all this stuff. It's weird.
Flamingo? Do you mean flamingo?
Flamingo. You know what it's like? It's all like, oh, this like is purple. This
flamenco
is...
dancers.
Well, one's a dance and the other's a bird, so I don't know what the fuck he's on about, to be honest.
But it's all this, there's so much gin. Yeah. It used to just be Gordon's.
Yeah. There's nothing
back
wrong
in the
with...
day, you'd have gin with tonic or gin with orange. Now you have gin with a scarf.
Yeah. Yeah. And a beret.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Gin floating in a hat.
We've talked about gin for literally 4.5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think you've said gin 29 times.
Gin. What was the name of the company again?
Warner Edwards
That's
Gin.
Warner Edwards.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
That's a great please. Merry Christmas to all.
Jesus Christ.
Mwah. What have we got, Mark?
Pringles, Texas barbecue. I can't believe they're only $1.49 at the moment. Half price.
No, they're more than that.
Oh, okay. I've gone for an album.
Yeah.
It's by a band called Architects. They're from Brighton.
Yeah.
Really good. British metalcore band. They've just got an album out called Holy Hell, and it's their 8th album. Now, I'm not going to try and be cool and be like, I was there at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I actually only just discovered them a couple of weeks ago.
Good.
I listened to the song called Hereafter and Damnation, and I honestly believe they're probably one of the best bands on the scene right now. The sad story is, in 2016, they lost their guitarist Tom to cancer. So this album's dark. It's bleak. They went away. They announced at that point they need to take a break, obviously. They've come back 2 years later, and Sam Carter, the vocalist, has publicly said he didn't think they'd come back. They've delivered an album that is absolutely unbelievable. Ben, I'm not just saying this.
Mm.
You won't get a band any closer to Dillinger Escape Plan than this. It
yeah.
is exactly like it. They talk about it, the influence, the sound, the production, the guitar, that tone that's so unique to Dillinger. They have got it. And if they're doing it right and they're doing it well, I'll respect that and not say plagiarism or copy.
Uh-huh.
They're fucking awesome.
Well, the strange thing is, I used to be into them. I say into them, I'm stretching it, but I had one of yeah. their records maybe, I don't know, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember it being really good. And for whatever reason, I just didn't stick with them. I just didn't get their future stuff.
Yeah.
But I will now.
It's awesome, mate. Their new album is absolutely awesome. It's good. No gin. And they're not going to send me anything for free.
Yeah.
But it's a damn good album, and I can't wait to see them play. I'm hoping they do some festivals next year, so we could hopefully catch them, because they're getting huge. They're like that Bring Me Horizon. They're just blowing up now.
Yeah. But, do you know, you may disagree, but for me, the best accompaniment with a good gin is some hardcore British metal. they go hand in hand for me.
I want to know what you've got now, because you're sitting there listening to this band with a nice glass of gin.
Yeah, make the Holy Trinity.
What have you got?
Well, you know, you've put your headphones down, you've finished, you've gone and poured yourself another drink, and then you want to read a good book.
Ah.
So I've got a book called The Fifth Risk by Michael Lewis. Now, Michael Lewis is known for writing brilliantly entertaining books about seemingly dry and boring topics. So I'll give you a couple of examples. He wrote Moneyball.
Oh.
Which is about sabermetric data analysis in baseball. And he also wrote The Big Short, which is about a bunch of finance nerds profiting off the failure of investment banks, both of which were made in terrific movies. This new book he's written called The Fifth Risk. He turns his attention to Donald Trump, and specifically Donald Trump's complete lack of preparation to be president and how that has just led to disaster for the US from day one. Just to give you a bit of background, at the start of a new presidency, the new president is legally bound to send in a transition team to all the government departments because all the people who worked under the previous president are out of a job because they no longer work for the government, so they have to leave. So what you have to do is have a transition team to have a handover. Donald Trump went, I'm not having a transition team. It's too much money. I'm not paying.
Fucking clown.
And then he's a fuckstick. And then his handler said to him, no, Donald, it's federal law. You have to do it. You know, put your crayons down. You have to do it. So what he did is he half-assed it as best as possible, right? So what happens is the day after a president wins the election, the next day, what will happen is the president will send in a transition team into all of the departments, Department of Education, Department of Commerce, Department of Defense, all of those things, right? They will send a transition team in. The whole team will have done a PowerPoint presentation, all of this, and will pass on all this knowledge. Donald Trump didn't bother sending any teams. So all these people in the departments were sat there with their presentations ready in these boardrooms. No one turned up. Weeks up to months later, a few people would start trickling in when Donald Trump got round to it. Not full teams, usually just one or two dudes. And then what he'd do is he would put his cronies in charge of these departments. So I'll give you a couple of examples. The Department for Energy, big fucking department, historically is always run by scientists. Yeah. Donald Trump has put as the head of the Department of Energy a guy called Rick Perry. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with Rick Perry, but he is a dipshit politician, a hick fucking fool, who when he himself was running for president a few years ago, said that he would abolish the Department of Energy because it was a waste of money. That's who's in front of it now. Because Donald Trump, in his mind, the Department of Energy to him is just scientists coming up with nuclear power or other power forms so that oil doesn't make as much money. But of course, all his friends are oil barons, so he's not going to have that. So he sent in this moron who wants to shut the place down. Another one, there's a thing called the Weather Service. And what the Weather Service do is they have scientific data analysis, they have weather balloons, they have satellites and all this, and they provide the weather to the people, to the country. They
quite useful.
Quite bloody useful. Yeah. Actually, yeah.
Handy.
Again, historically, the leaders of the Weather Service have been scientists.
Wow. Yeah.
He sent in this guy called Barry Myers, who is the CEO of a company called AccuWeather, which is an app and a website where you can pay to be told what the weather is.
Jesus H.
And this Barry Myers has been lobbying for years to get the Weather Service shut down because he doesn't believe that people should get the weather for free.
Oh
he
God.
Believes they should pay him. But he's a fucking idiot as well, because what Barry Myers fails to notice or fails to tell anyone is that all their weather data is from the Weather Service. Barry Myers' company doesn't have their own weather balloons, doesn't have their own
Jesus
satellites.
Christ.
They get it from the Weather Service. He just doesn't believe people should get it for free. But again, Donald Trump, all he thinks is, oh, we're giving away something for free, let's put someone in who'll make people charge for it. They don't just tell you it's raining. They're also the people who tell people there's a fucking hurricane coming.
Yeah.
There's a fucking tornado coming, man.
These families people, will die.
Families will die. They're massively important. Yeah. But Donald Trump is putting his Bezzy mates in. As long as he's making money, as long as his friends are making money, fuck the country, fuck the citizens, he doesn't care. He doesn't care about you, Americans, if you're listening, whether you vote for him or not. He doesn't care about you. He only cares about himself and his fucking wallet.
He's a twat waffle.
He's an absolute C-U-N-T.
Yeah.
Cunt is the word.
If
you can't spell, the word I said was cunt.
Do you want me to beat that or
no,
leave it in?
Leave it in.
Yes.
Leave it in. Because I stand by it big time.
Cunts.
But this whole book, it just demonstrates how woefully unprepared he is. It's a brilliant read, but utterly infuriating. It just fills you full
you
of
can't
rage.
Tell. I think you're all right.
Rage.
Have a gin.
Oh, I might really have to.
Listen to some metalcore and relax.
That'll calm me down.
What a social media company. Because what I love about this at the moment, when I go on Facebook and Twitter and read back, I'm not going to lie, I get on Amazon and I'm starting ordering stuff.
Yeah.
There was a lot this time.
Oh, we got some great stuff as well. On Facebook, Alan Walden has said, I highly recommend a sitcom on Netflix called The Kominsky Method, starring Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin as two longtime best friends dealing with the inevitabilities of old age. It's very funny, but occasionally very moving and even heartbreaking. Mm. Have either of you seen this?
Of course I haven't.
No.
I've not watched it yet, but the reviews say it's very good.
Yeah.
You know, Alan Arkin and Michael Douglas, that's two heavy hitters.
You can't go wrong, can you?
Yeah, they're iconic. Good.
Yeah. On Twitter, Stuart, at From Page to Screen, has said, the book, Bill Duke, My 40-Year Career on Screen and Behind the Camera. It's wonderful, emotional, educational, and super entertaining. Now, if you're not familiar with Bill Duke, he's one of those guys, he's been a character actor, as he says, for 40 years. He was in Predator, he was in Commando, he was in one of the X-Men films, and most recently, he was in Mandy. So, do you remember when Nick Kay's character goes to his mate who lives in a camper van to get his crossbow, his weapon, the guy he gets his weapon from? That's Bill Duke.
Nice.
And he's just one of those guys who's popped up in a million things over the years.
Oh, well, I never.
And Stuart says his book is very entertaining.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'll read that one. On Instagram, Andrew, a.k.a. Andrew _ Moores, has said Series 2 of Castlevania is out on Netflix and is great.
Love Series 1.
I love Series 1. I haven't watched Series
2
yet.
No, me neither.
Yeah. Is that based on the game?
Indeed it is.
Wow.
Yeah. It's an American cartoon, but done in the Japanese anime style, and it's very good.
Sold.
It's awesome.
I used to love the game.
Me too,
Me three.
Ben Reed at Dark Breeder said, seen him a few times and finally got around to buying Bury Me in Philly by Dave Hawes. It's pure blue-collar rock and roll in the vein of Springsteen and Gaslight Anthem.
Wow.
Cool.
I'm not familiar with that chap.
Big words.
Yeah. Mm. Comparing him to Springsteen, that is big bloody words. Speaking of Springsteen, Jamie, aka Jam761 on Instagram, has said, I've started reading Bruce Springsteen's book, Born to Run.
Nice.
I'm not a fan of Springsteen, never been my cup of tea, but I imagine that's a good book.
I love Springsteen.
I bet he's got some stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
like him. He's
amazing live. Yeah. I was there when he headlined Glastonbury, and he's just something else. He's so good.
Give that a read. Barking Mad About Films at Bill626 has said, really enjoying sci-fi drama The First on Channel 4. This is that Sean Penn one.
Yeah.
Have either of you seen it?
Oh. No, Greg's watching it and he said he needs more convincing.
Yeah.
It's very slow at the moment.
I've heard good things.
See, the reviews I've read say it's wank. They say it's really boring and
more
slow.
More from humans on Twitter and stuff are saying it's great. But
was that Sean Penn's mum?
Yeah.
Dawn Penn.
Yeah.
On Facebook, Joanne Christine Foe has said, The Winner by David Baldacci. Just freaking amazing. I've read it 3 times now.
Wow.
Not familiar with that, but that's a good recommendation. We'll
she's read it 3 times, you know what I mean?
It's got to be good.
Yeah. K Kieran Brown at Chunky Redbeard has said, as it's that time of the year, the Nightmare Revisited album is very good. It's the Nightmare Before Christmas soundtrack reworked in some interesting styles by various artists like Marilyn Manson and Korn.
I'm in.
That sounds awesome.
What?
I didn't even know it existed.
And that must have been out, what, 10, 15, yeah. 20 years? I don't know.
I'll have to listen to that on Spotify.
Spotify.
Do you think Korn was doing the, what's this?
On Instagram, Master Debaters Podcast_MasterDebaters. I finished reading The Shining the other day. Hey. Way better ending the film.
Yep.
And 100% less Shelley Duvall.
Agreed. Completely yeah. agreed. And some scary topiary animals to boot.
They're a great podcast as well. You should check them out. The Master Debaters. Really cool guy. I met them in Birmingham last week. I was at MCM and I actually met them. They're really nice guys. Really. And they're big fans of ours.
Was that before or after you met Shane Ward?
Slightly before.
I loved you in X Factor.
They get all the big names. I know.
He's a cool guy.
And then finally on Twitter, Todd Murgatroyd at Todd28289 has said, Norsemen on Netflix. It's a fantastic piece of TV, and devastatingly, it's only two seasons. Think The Office set in a Viking settlement.
See, that sounds incredible.
Yeah. You had me at The Office.
Yeah. I'm going to watch that.
Yeah, me too.
Me three.
There we go. We won't.
There we go. Yeah.
So please keep your recommendations coming in on Twitter at STTE Podcast, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or on email podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. We are cooking now, kids. We're cooking.
Cooking on gas.
Over before it starts. Like, this seems so quick.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to carry on.
I do. Mainly because I want more Pringles.
I know. Should we come back in 2 weeks?
Why not?
Well, that's
not
have a holiday yet.
No, not yet. But it will be after that. Because it's Christmas. But yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks. And our next episode is going to be a biggie. It's going to be a bumper episode. Let's tell them what the basics are. Gemma, what's our topic of conversation?
The topic of conversation is going to be our top three movie mums. I think after... We had a great old chat earlier on about our disturbing films. But I think let's have a hug and a mug.
We got it at Christmas. We need it to feel like a nice festive time.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Can't get more festive than mums.
Indeed. Mark, what is our rewatch?
Well, tying in nicely with the festive and the hugs and everything, it's a National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Oh, I'm so excited.
I can already hear people on social media now going, yes! Because it's a good one, isn't it?
It's one of the greatest Christmas films of all time and just one of the funniest comedies of all time, I would say.
Can't go wrong.
Our main review is going to be Aquaman, which is actually looking pretty bloody good.
Christmassy, because water turns to ice and you have ice in sherry.
You're reaching that. Sherry! I just think of you drinking sherry in front of a log fire. Yeah.
Or a lovely little dram.
A bit more sherry.
Oh, Gemma, who are we masturbating over?
Oh, the one and only Stanley Kubrick.
That's a big one.
The big dog.
That's huge, isn't it, really? But we're just going, just Stanley Kubrick.
It's gargantuan.
Just that little fella. And Mark, we got the last round of the game, haven't we?
We have, and I'm going to be the games master. So veg your bets, and it's all to play for.
It is indeed. It
certainly is.
I look forward to that. But as well as that, we'll have the other usual goodies. We'll have our prize giveaway, as we always do. But also, because it's our last episode of the year, it's our Christmas special, it's our, I guess, New Year special also, we're going to give you our top fives of the year. We're going to name our top five movies of the year. We'll also give you our worst movie of the year as well for a bit of fun. We'll also name our top five TV shows of the year. And we'll also do a top five other pop culture items of the year as well. So it's going to be a big bumper festive episode.
Fandabba-daisy.
It's even more value for your money, and it's free.
More bang for your buck.
Yeah, it's bloody good, isn't it, really?
Can't complain.
What else should we do? Should we do something else?
Nah.
We'll give away loads of good, like, really good prizes. I'll try and get, like, a Christmas bundle and stuff, you know, like, extra big.
Yeah, it's like Krampus 2 out. Yeah. Because I'm sure we've still got about 40 Krampus bundles to give away.
We need to really sort that out.
Like 5 years ago.
It's going to be good. I'm already excited because it's going to be Christmas as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be fantastic. So we shall see you in 2 weeks. I've got so much.